Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
And welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya, who's on route and getting on live here on Leave the Ring. Make sure you download the app so you can listen to us live here on the radio show. You can get it on your Android. You just got to go to Google Play, and you can get it on your iPhone at your Apple Store. All right, man, 3 hours of boxing talk. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving in the Ring. We got some upcoming fights, upcoming predictions. We got a lot of things to talk about here. Some news. You got Sugar Shane Mosley back in the mix. He's going to be fighting in Mexico, Cancun, Mexico. What a place to fight. Yeah, I saw something on, I don't know if it was an article, because I was just kind of thumbing through stuff on my phone, and I saw it on Twitter. So I don't know whether or not it was just a quote that somebody got off of him saying off of Twitter or in an interview. Or whatever that quote was from. But he had said, I'm going to retire when I want to retire. Well, hear this. Haven't you been saying you were going to retire? I mean, stop saying you're going to retire and then get upset after somebody goes off and says, hey, are you going to retire anytime soon? I thought you were supposed to be retired. That's my thought. Now, him getting back in, I don't understand. I mean, you know, I reached out to him and didn't hear back from him. And I figured I wasn't, to tell you the truth. I figured I wasn't going to hear back from Sugar Shane. And let me give you the reason why I kind of knew that he wasn't going to respond back to me, was because of the question there is, you know, hey, what happened here? Well, I mean, I thought you retired. And let me tweet out there really quick. Okay, throw it out there that we're on live here. And let people know that we're doing our thing. But I don't want to lose my train of thought about here, Sugar Shane Mosley here. So anyways, so I figured he knew the question was going to be, thought you retired, thought you were done. You know, you were now moving on and training your son. And that's pretty much where the remainder of your career was going to go into, which was train your son, right? But now it's kind of spun around. He's back in the mix with Golden Boy, and he's back in Mexico, Cancun, Mexico, however you want to say it. And I don't know whether or not, because one of the questions I wanted to ask, I don't know if anybody had a chance to ask it. If you did, tweet me back if somebody asked this question. And I know that there was a big sum of money taken away from him when he had the alimony thing with his wife, but that was a while back. Or the lifestyle that he's living now. Is he running out of money that he needs, the amount of money that he needs to live the lifestyle that he's been living? I mean, I keep hearing he's with Bella, he's not with Bella. And when you know, if you're with Bella, you got to have some pricey, you got to have some money there, right? So that's my question is that you got a guy that's strapped to the ring game, can't get out of it because of the fact that he's either in a lot of debt or he just needs to keep up with the lifestyle because it doesn't make any sense. When you hear a guy who sounded that like they were happy, and we had him on Leaving the Ring. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but we had him on Leaving the Ring, and he was pretty much like saying, hey, I'm done. I'm going to just, you know, focus on training my son, and I'm just going to live under the sun. Then all of a sudden, bang, he's back in the mix. And we're hearing he's going to be in the ring again. Now, not a whole lot of coverage. I didn't see a whole lot of stuff about Shane Mosley getting back in the ring. I saw more stuff about J-Love getting popped with some, you know, diuretic. And that's another thing I wanted to kind of, as soon as Gabriel Montoya gets on, and even Fight Fans, you want to call in, man, certainly can. 347-215-7598. But this isn't this the second the money team member of his camp that got popped? was a substance in their system. You know, and when we had Mickey Bay, who did the Naked Truth with Gabriel Montoya. It was the second episode on your mobile app, Leaving the Rings mobile app. And you can, if you didn't have a chance to tune in, listen to it. And I was talking to Henry Ramirez. I don't know whether or not Henry wanted me to talk about this and kind of drop his name out there, but I am anyways. You know, Henry can give me a ring or a text. But I don't think what I'm about to say is too bad of what he's talking about, what he had mentioned, because it made a lot of sense to me. And he went back and, you know, we've had Lamont Peterson, when, you know, he got tested, and even Andre Berto, they did their very first interview on Leaving the Ring on their comeback and discussion of them testing positive under the VATA banner. Okay. But Henry Ramirez had mentioned something. He said, the first guy says it was medical condition. Now it just kind of seems, it kind of seems like that's the scapegoat of quotes to get out of certain things. And you have Mickey Bay and, excuse me, let me get some water here. My throat's getting dry. I've been having this on and off cold here and there. But so anyways, so you listen to Mickey Bay with Gabriel Montoya on The Naked Truth, and he pretty much put it out there, kind of the same scenario with Lamont Peterson. You know, I wasn't feeling well. I went to the doctor. I told him, you know, I don't like putting any type of drugs or anything, and basically no supplements into my system, into my body. My body's my temple, in other words. But the doctors, you know, went off and supposedly went in there and did their own thing. Now, I'm not one to sit there and go like, well, that's not true. I don't believe you. I'm one of those guys that want to hear it all out before I start making complete judgment. And you listen to the kid, and he sounds sincere, Mickey Bay. And I'm still saying that I'm not sure whether I'm like on the fence about it. I don't know whether if I believe it or if I don't believe it. Because like I said, speaking to Henry Ramirez, who's a trainer in the game of boxing, and he's around fighters. He works for fighters 24/7. And he said, it just seems that is just the way of getting out of everything. Now, I'm curious of hearing what Jay Love has to say, the love story of what happened here. And I don't know if that story's been uncovered yet. I kind of been out of the scene, man, to tell you the truth, because I've been really, really just swamped at work. And, you know, anytime it comes summertime, man, we just get overwhelmed with crap. And, you know, I have to thumb through stuff and just kind of catch up with, you know, our writers of Leaving the Ring. You know, Brian Fogg hit me up before I went on, 15 minutes before I came on, just kind of updated me with certain things, certain topics that we needed to discuss here on Leaving the Ring. So you got two things. You got Sugar Shane Mosley. What's up? Why are you out of retirement? You keep saying you're going to retire, but now you're back into the ring. If you lose this fight, then you go back into retirement. And if you're not, if you're not going to be fully in retirement, if only half your body's through that door, you might as well just hush, because it just starts becoming like, whatever, dude. Like, I don't even want to hear it no more. I think it's just better that you realize that you're just that. You know what? I would rather hear a fighter say, listen, I'm just here for a paycheck. I'm a stepping stone for these other fighters, and I have a name. Even though I'm over the hill or I'm still semi-good, I have a name good enough to bring an audience, to make a younger fighter, a younger lion, look better than what he may not be. Now, Canelo, who he's fighting, is a good fighter. I strongly believe he beat Paulo Malignaggi, who's fighting Broner. Who's not only fighting Broner, he's arguing with Broner about their ex. But the J-Love story, and I'm jumping from here and there and there from here, right? But the J-Love story, the J. Leon story, I'm sorry. Two guys. When don't we start just not accepting the excuse of, I went to the doctor, I didn't know what was being injected to me, and this is the truth and nothing but the truth. I'm going to patch in some fight fans here while we're waiting for the dark cloud, because he might have some more info. You know, Gabriel, man, he's always on top of stuff like that. and his plane was delayed. So I think we got our first caller. Let's patch in our first caller here on Leave the Ring. Don't forget, download the mobile app. And, you know, we're gonna catch up to what everything we've promised that we've said we're going to put on the mobile app. But here, let's go with our first caller. I believe we got, area code 860. You're on live right now with us on Leave the Ring, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on, Dave? It's 2T. How you doing?
I'm doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
All right. Sitting here listening to you. I'm looking forward to the fight this weekend, especially the Peterson and Matisse. What do you feel about that fight this weekend? I don't know if you wanted to talk about it now or later on, but
you know, I think out of the whole month of May, that's really the fight that I've been waiting for. The way Lamont Peterson on that ESPN card against Holt, and I know everybody's like, oh come on, dude, it was Holt, but that man, it was so intense after that stoppage that you kind of got drawn into his, you know, his kind of the Lamont Peterson world. You know what I mean? Where the frustration, the, you know, being out of the ring because of being, you know, popped, and then not being able to, you know, have that rematch, that big money rematch with Amir Khan, and from being on a certain escalon, being dropped down. You know what I mean? It's like you paid your dues. It's like, you know, you finally get that promotion, right? And first day of work, you come in, you're all pumped up, and then somebody comes and says, oh, man, you know what? Yeah, the dude didn't decide to retire. You're going to have to step back down. You're going to have to go back downstairs to the mailing room. That's what happened with Lamont Peterson in a lot of ways. So I want to see whether or not the fluke of him stopping the whole, was it a fluke? You know, did he look stronger than what he was supposed to look? Because he's fighting a guy, man, that's just got, he's got sleep in those hands. You know, he has that touch of sleep. And Matisse's been looking better and better. But here's a guy, too, Mike Dallas. Do we really jump up and down? I know a lot of fans on Twitter and Facebook, they were going nuts about that stoppage of Mike Dallas. I mean, I was surprised it was so quick, but should we be that ecstatic about a stoppage over Mike Dallas? What do you think?
No, I was actually impressed with his win over Jose Luzigan. I think Luzigan's style, to me, I think would have been troublesome for anybody. I think there's a reason why Garcia maybe didn't take that fight right away. And Matisse proved that, you know, he's the real deal. I think he punches very hard, and he's a hard puncher with boxing skills. But I think going into this fight, I'm going to have to go with Peterson because Peterson makes adjustments all the time. The only time he didn't make adjustments as far as that stand was against Bradley. But mostly all the time, Peterson makes very good adjustments. He comes in with a very good tight defense. And I think when he whips those punches to Matisse's body and he gets on the inside, I think it's going to tell a little bit in this fight. I think no one's going to Matisse's body. And Peterson's pretty strong himself. I think both guys are mentally strong in the ring. They both got really good boxing skills. I'll give the power edge to Matisse, but I think Peterson thinks a little bit, you know, more in the ring. But then again, when a guy has punching power like Matisse does, a punch can change the fight at any time. So we'll see how – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and finish your thought.
I was going to say, we'll just see how, you know, Peterson takes Matisse's punch. I mean, he took Ortiz's punch and he made adjustments in that fight. But with this guy, he has power in both hands. He hits a little bit harder than Ortiz. I think, you know, Matisse has that very – you know, he knocks down a lot of fighters that he fights. So we'll see, you know, what goes on in this fight. I mean, it could go either way. It's a very hard fight to pick, but I'm going with Peterson by decision.
I'm not going to say my pick right now, but here's my breakdown of Peterson, you know, and I like some of the things that you said. So I'm gonna come from behind on that, which we're talking about. Adjustment. Lamont Peterson, starting off in his career, was a cutie, a guy that liked to be slick, use movement, and was a counterpuncher. Somewhere down the line, when he got in the ring with Timothy Bradley, the Desert Storm, it kind of changed. It was almost like, you know, he was trying to come to his own. He was trying to come full circle of who he wanted to be, which was a puncher, exciting fighter that the fans can relate to. Because, you know, we all fall in love with the guy that has the KO in the hand. But he wasn't ready to do that. And fighting Victor Ortiz, he got, you know, he got hurt, got dropped, I believe. I can't remember, but I think he did get dropped in that fight. But here's the question with this one. How much of it was Lamont Peterson adjusting, or how much of it was it Victor Ortiz having another meltdown because things did not go his way? Going to with Amir Khan, how much of the motivational speech did he have to stay with his coach in order to stick with his plan? Because for a brief moment, it almost looked like he was puzzled. He didn't really adjust. He wanted to adjust. He wanted to bang with them, but it was his trainer that kept him focused. It kept him on that. It kept him on that lane of sticking to the plan. Going with Holt was a little bit different. To me, it was more he overwhelmed the guy. He went in there. He looked bigger. He looked stronger, and he looked fresh. Can he adjust to a guy, though, like Matisse, who's very awkward? He's almost in the sense of a much bigger Ponce de Leon, okay? But this is a guy, and I've always mentioned this, is that when you get fighters that are very orthodox, that throw punches from different angles, and their footwork is kind of off, some of the things that they do is not very traditional, so it's kind of hard to time, that it can throw off your game plan because you can't get the proper preparations to face a guy like that. You know, I mean, look at Zab Duda. I mean, you know, Zab had all he could handle with Lucas Matisse. And with Lamont Peterson, he needs a guy that's almost kind of traditional. Almost, a guy that's going to come forward. He's going to throw straight down the pipe shots so that he could tee off. And he hasn't faced for a while since Amir Khan. Amir Khan had speed, and he threw punches that were kind of off as well. They weren't really with balance, but there wasn't a lot of power behind those off-balance shots. Where Matisse, there's power regardless if he's off balance. So I just wonder the adjustments of how is he going to do it without not really knowing what he's getting himself into, because, you know, it's kind of hard to go in blind and then kind of see it right away. You know, it takes a special fighter. And I'm not saying that Lamont's not special, but he hasn't shown it yet that he's that special to do something like that yet. It's a really tough pick for me. To me, it's a 50-50 fight. I think that's what makes this fight such a good fight. But I think the favor for every fight fan out there is going to be Lucas Matisse at this moment.
Yeah, you make some great points, Dave. Definitely looking forward to the fight. Like I said, it could end at any time with Matisse's punching power, too, because he hits hard downstairs to the body as well. I just don't know if Matisse's fought a fighter as strong as Peterson as well, too. So, I mean, this whole bunch of, like, different things we can go by in this fight. I'm just looking forward to it. I'm glad that two 140-pound elite-type fighters are getting it on and, you know, making their spot against Danny Garcia. I think whether Peterson or Matisse wins, they're going to give Garcia a fight like, you know, he never had. I think these two guys are the toughest guys a fight out there for Garcia.
I think so, too, man. You know, regardless of, you know, you get fight fans out there that say, I don't care about that cheater. He's this and that. And he's this and that. It, you know what? Take that out of the equation, and you got a great fight. You got a fight, man, worth sitting down and salivating over, because Lamont Peterson, like I said, he went from cutie to exciting. This guy is really broad. He's really stepped up his game. Matisse is another guy, too. This guy's really stepped up his game, because in the beginning, I got to say this, and fight fans could be, you know, they could disagree with me on what I'm about to say, but I think he's really surpassed, you know, Marcos Chino Madonna a whole lot in terms of kind of becoming a student of the game and wanting to better himself. Now, Chino has changed a little bit. He's stepped up his game as well, but, you know, Lucas, to me, is just he's just a much more polished fighter. He has much more of an understanding of his fundamentals in the ring. And this is another point I want to make with Lucas Matisse, because you mentioned something that, you know, Lamont Peterson may be the strongest guy he's faced. But what I like about Lucas Matisse is he doesn't fall in love with his power a whole lot. He kind of trusts himself to go that distance, and he always looks conditioned. So I'm not expecting a Lucas to go in there and think, okay, I'm going to blow him out because I blew out Mike Dallas. I expect a guy that's going to go in there and just put in that blue collar work that we've seen from him time and time after time after time, you know. And I don't think Lamont, and there's another thing Lamont's camp has got to understand. You're not bringing anything to Lucas Matisse that he hasn't really seen, which is like speed and boxing skills. This guy, that's all he's faced. You know, he's never walked into the ring being the much better fighter or the faster fighter. He's been the guy that has to put in the work. He's got to put the pipe on the he's got to put the wrench on the pipe to make sure there's no leaks in his game. That's Lucas Matisse.
Yeah,
so this is a good fight.
That's a good point. That's a good point too. He's fought a lot of good opposition himself. You know, crafty fighters like DeMarcus Coley and Zab Judah. So yeah, I agree with you. I think Matisse, like you said, and he has power all through the fight. So that makes him a lot dangerous too. And he has boxing skills. So I think he's on another level than Maidana myself. So. Yeah, great point, Dave. I'm just looking forward to the fight, man.
All right, brother. Well, thanks for calling in, man. I appreciate it, as always.
Thank you.
Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Hey, in the news, I've been seeing this too as well. Kareem Mayfield, who's out of San Francisco Fillmore. I got a lot of friends that are down over there. Slow-O, Checkmate Records. And Kareem's really good friends with them, and I've known Kareem Mayfield for a very long time, man. Really good kid. Nice kid, you know. He's got power. He's got KO in his hand. They call him the hard hitter. And he's been, you know, voicing his opinion. But it's been a while back that he's been wanting Danny Garcia. But here's my thing. And I saw this on one of those LA Setback videos where he said the game said that Kareem Mayfield would knock out Danny Garcia. And I was just like, come on, man, the game? Is the game really a boxing fan? I mean, I never heard of the game, the rapper, the game, talk about boxing. I mean, here's my thing. Now, Kareem Mayfield, he's got power, and he's been having a winning streak. He's undefeated, and he's been looking good. He's been knocking out the guys that he needs to knock out. But he hasn't knocked out the top quality guy that you think that he should knock out at the moment. You know, he hasn't really just kind of stepped out of that box. Him calling out Danny Garcia, here's the big problem. 2 years ago when he was doing the same thing, calling out Danny Garcia, that fight made a lot of sense. For Danny Garcia right now to get Kareem, the hard hitter, Mayfield, doesn't make any sense. Because you got two fighters that happened this Saturday night, Lamont Peterson, Lucas Matisse, for him to make some big money, which fight fans are clamoring for and wanting to see. Kareem Mayfield's name is not in that mix. What Kareem needs to do is get together with his team, his promotional company, his management, or anybody else that will listen and get somebody of note, of name. Keep getting in that ring. Keep doing in the work because Kareem does have power. He could turn a fight with one punch. He could put a guy to sleep. Not saying that he can't do that to Danny Garcia at this moment because it only takes one punch. That is the beauty of our sport in boxing, is that the guy that's the underdog, the man that you go, hell no, he can't win, he's the dude that can just come up in a hurry, real quick, on top of the mountain, be the king of the mountain, king of the hill. So, but in order to get those opportunities, you got to do what? You got to fight him. You got to do your talking in the ring. You know, and I feel for him. This kid's been in the sport for quite some time. But you got to, before you start calling out Danny Garcia, I could be wrong. Hey, I don't know. What do I know? I'm just a guy that does a boxing radio show and owns a website and an app, right? But my feelings and my thoughts, keep calling out Danny Garcia. But in the process of doing something like that, you have to get somebody of note in order to get that big fight. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in, I'll just get an update here from Gabriel Montoya. He's in the shuttle. He's on his way home, and he'll be calling in a short bit here on Leaving the Ring. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's talk about, give me a ring. Tell me what you think about Sugar Shane Moses. Tell me what you think about upcoming fights this Saturday, or even on ESPN Friday. What you thought about Vernon Paris and his fight on ESPN. Let's talk some boxing here, man. I want to be updated about Paul Amanadze and Adrian Broner. You know, throwing the girlfriend in the mix in the conversation, the press conference. This past week was Angulo, and you had Angulo, you know, Arislandi Lara. You had in their press conference and Chino Madonna, and you had Josecito Lopez. They had their exchange of words, and you know, we got some good fights, man, being really put up in the mix. You know, we had Steve Kim on last week telling us the reason why the you know, we all want to see Canelo, but there's a strong possibility that's not going to happen. Why? Because of the market ability, not the the market value that Canelo brings. You really can count him out in terms of money. You know, where it just takes a bigger piece of the cake with Showtime and Floyd Mayweather. Just, you know, they may not be able to afford it. So anyways, fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here. Let's patch in another fight fan here. Let's see. We got area code 510. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind?
Well, man, I'm just listening right now, brother.
All right, brother. Thanks, man. Put you back on hold.
All right.
All right, fight fans. 347-215-7598. Let's go down the line. Let's get area code 718. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, brother. How you doing?
Good. I'm calling I was calling because ever since Marquez knocked out Pacquiao, I was really disappointed with the writers and the boxing. You know, they were talking about, you know, the whole thing with his trainer, that, you know, he was linked to performing enhancing drugs, right? And from my perspective, I view this like, even if Marquez wanted to get testing, the guy that picks, you know, that this actually decides Pacquiao, he's a number one star. And, you know, if he wanted the testing to be done for that fight, there would have been testing. If Marquez would have said, let's have some testing, his opinion didn't matter. You know, at the end of the day, it's Pacquiao, similar to like Mayweather. They run their own show. And I want to ask this question to Montoya. Why would he kind of like downgrade his victory because of his trainer, even though he's the B-side? He doesn't decide anything.
Gable's not on yet. He's going to be on in a short bit.
But what about your opinion? What do you thought about his link with his trainer and the whole concert? Like a lot of people were saying, well, he knocked him out because, you know, he was fitter. And et cetera. And at the end of the day, the guy that actually should make the decision is Pacquiao.
Here's my thing, and I agree with you. You know, with the whole testing, Juan Manuel Marquez, should he have tested? Let's look at this right now, where Memo Heredia still does not do any testing. He tweets out there that he wants to do USADA. His fighters are willing to take a test, 24/7. They want to do this and that. But just saying what you want to do and not following through in what you're saying you're going to do are two completely different things. We're seeing more and more that Memo Heredia is not going to put his fighters under any type of testing, any type of exposure of what's being put in their system. So I think it's just pretty clear. I mean, I think anybody that has any two cents can kind of figure out there's something just not right about Memo Heredia. He's changed his name. He had a documentary where he mocked the testings of Olympian. He's mocked the testings of any type of commission or anti-doping, and basically even challenging them, saying that if you guys can do any type of testing and we'll figure out a way of getting around it, because that's what they do 24/7. They're getting, if an athlete's giving them an X amount of money, that X amount of money is for them to figure out a way to get by a test.
No, I agree with you, but remember, the reason why the Pacquiao Mayweather, one of the reasons that it didn't get made was because Pacquiao's hesitant to get tested. And for this fight, what I'm saying is, okay, you know, this guy is associated with some guy who's kind of fishy, but let's say Marquez said, either we have testing or no fight, Pacquiao and Babalo would have just gone and walked away and gotten somebody else to fight. So my whole thing is, you know, I get your comments, but if Pacquiao really wanted some testing for that fight, it would have happened. I'm pretty sure Marquez wouldn't have said, oh, no, I'm not going to fight Pacquiao in December.
I don't know. I mean, we could say, yeah, you know, I don't know. That's a hard one to think about. I mean, I think that I honestly think that Marquez would have went through with it because he wanted that fight so bad with them this last time. This time, I just think it's already it's in Marquez's favor now. You know what I mean? In the past, yeah, I think he would have went for it. I'm not sure though that Memo Heredia would have been in part of that team. I think he would have fouled out. I think he would have like kind of went right back into the shadows. But you know, it's one of those things where it should have it, but it didn't. What can we do now? Now we just basically got to live in the present, right?
Yes, that's true. One thing also, Adrian Broner, what's your feeling? Because I really don't like that guy. You know, I don't think he's, you know, he looks too fake. You know, he's trying to be a Mayweather, but you know, the whole Mayweather, his whole acting, you know, it seems real. This guy just seems like he just wants to get attention. You know, he's not a Mayweather, he's not a Mike Tyson. You know that. They had that, you know, that natural charisma. It's like everything that he's trying to do is just—he's trying too hard for me.
You know what? You know what's funny is that I've talked to a lot of fans. They all say the exact same thing you're just saying right now. But here's the thing: you're talking about him. So think about this: the kid is getting his name out there. He's gotten his name out there a lot quicker than a lot of the fighters that have been in the game for quite some time. You know, look how long it took for particular fighters to even get the recognition that they needed. I mean, Sergio Martinez, this guy was a phenom, you know, but it took a minute because, you know, for one, they were saying it was marketability, his age, nobody wanted to fight him. Broner, you know, made sure that he was relevant at all times. He made sure that he took the understanding of what it took Floyd to understand that you have to have, there has got to be a villain in the sport of boxing. Though we don't like the villain, we want to see the villain get beaten. The villain is needed in boxing. And Broner got caught on to that right away. Did he follow the footprints of Floyd Mayweather, of the way Floyd portrays himself? Absolutely. Is it an act? I don't know. Look at his rap sheet. The kid obviously has got some issues with the law. He's been having issues for a very long time. Where he comes from, a lot of these fighters got a lot of issues. You know, there's fighters that I've heard from other camps that there's fighters that were better than Broner. You know, a lot, you know, more gifted than Broner, but never made it to the fight game because either they ended up in jail or they ended up 6 feet under. So how much of an act is this from Broner? I'm not really sure. I mean, it's a little bit of an act to sell the tickets, but I think the guy's a lot more of a jerk than we all want to accept.
Yes, he is. And the thing is, he hasn't really done anything at the beginning. You know, at least Mayweather, first couple of years, he fought the best lightweight Castillo. He fought the best junior featherweight, junior lightweight, Genaro Hernandez, Angel Man Freddy. And this guy, you know, he got lightweight, and he just jumped two classes, didn't even fight the top lightweight, didn't even fight the top 140 to go and fight Paulie Marigianaro. I know that Paulie is very popular in New York, but I wish the fighters could go back to that era, or at least beating the top two fighters in the division. Like, you know what, Felix Tito Trinidad did. He fought the two best welterweight, De La Hoya and Whitaker. Then he went up and beat the best two junior middleweight, in Fernando Vargas and David, and then he went up to middleweight and fought the two best guys. And I wish some fighters at least are able to do that, you know, unify the title, become the real fighter in the division. And it's not, you know, it's unfortunate that it doesn't happen because I think that would have helped the sport a lot.
Listen, this is what Broner learned. And, you know, we go to school for a reason. You know, we go to school, we send our kids to school for a reason. My kids come back and they'll complain and say, Dad, I don't understand why I'm taking social studies. I don't get why we need to learn history. Well, we don't want to repeat it. We want to learn from history. We want to be able to make better decisions so we don't fall back what our forefathers did and their mistakes. Broner did his social studying. He did the exam correctly. He watched what the older guys were doing. He figured it out. And instead of staying in line, in the back of the line, this kid did exactly what a lot of other kids are doing around the world. He cut in line. He got himself in the front of the line by cutting. He did the shortcut. He figured it out. He figured that he needed to be marketed and that if he waited for anybody else to market him, he wasn't going to get to the point where he needed to be. So So he took it in his own hands, and that's exactly why we are talking about Adrian Broner, where you're absolutely right. He hasn't done a whole lot for us to talk about or for us to go, hey, we want to see him do this and do that. There's still a lot of questions for Broner, but I think the fascinating part is look how quick he's gotten where he needed to be for us to want to see what he's really got. Hey, brother, thanks for calling in, man. I appreciate it. I'm going to put you back on hold.
Thank you. Take care.
Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Some good discussions here on Leaving the Ring. You can talk to us here on Brian Frog. Broner didn't go to school, literally, though. Yeah, no, I'm talking about other kids, okay? I'm talking about, hey, he had to understand Brian Frog is one of our writers. He's one of our journalists, man, really upcoming, quick. And talking about cutting front of the line, Brian Frog, man, is just making a name for himself. This guy just breaks stories after stories. He digs up the truth. He's on a story right now that he called me up, and he's supposed to get me an update in a short bit and let me know what's going on. But, I go back. This kid is a student of the game. He watched the game, and he kind of figured it out. I mean, he's got a YouTube video. I mean, that YouTube series. He's doing like a Docker YouTube series. I don't know if anybody's caught on to that. It's called Making Millions, and, you know, he kind of figured it out. He's like, I got to market myself. I can't wait for this person, I can't wait for Monica Sears, I can't wait for, you know, Oscar De La Hoya, I can't wait for the rest of the guys from Golden Boys to figure out where to place me. I'm going to place myself in the category where I think I need to be. And the category he decided was to be under the shadow of Floyd Mayweather Jr., which is the villain role. Now, even though now Floyd is trying to be the good guy, the guy with the white hat, trying to rebuild his credibility, trying to rebuild his image because of the fact of his faulties with the law on his domestic violence, the 10 counts. And I know it's the Floyd Mayweather fans are going to go nuts over this. Oh, there's no proof. There's no this. There's no that. Well, fortunately, there was enough to put him in for, 29 days, 30 days? Didn't even do the full amount. But when the law says, hey, you're wrong, guess what? You're wrong. It's on black and white. It's on a piece of paper. A lot of innocent people out there that are locked up in the world, and they could probably sit there and tell you that they're innocent. But, hey, when the law says you're wrong, unfortunately, hey, you're wrong. That's just the way it goes. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Let's pass in another fight fan. We're still waiting for Mr. Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. Tell me what's up next, if he's going to be coming through or what, or am I all alone? And let's see. Let's get it. You know what? Talking about Brian Fogg here. Let's get him on right now, and he can update us here with Lucas Matisse. He showed up late in Atlantic City. Brian, you there, brother?
Hey, how's it going, Dave?
Going good, man. Give me an update about that. What was going on with Lucas Matisse? Why did he show up late?
Apparently, he had visa problems coming into the country, and he just got to AC today, apparently.
Ooh. Wow.
That's not good.
No, it's not. I mean, you figure stress that you're not going to come into the States. Stress because you probably didn't get the proper rest. Stress because it might be a little bit of jet lag. Stress you didn't get in here and you weren't able to train and warm up and continue working on your game plan.
Well, and especially thinking his last couple of fights, he came in at like 152, 151. When you're trying to cut, when you're dehydrating yourself 10, 11 pounds, one day is a big difference.
Major difference. You know, I'm wondering if because I don't know who brings a scale along with them. And you think about it, a good trainer would probably think that, or well, they're trying to figure out the visa situation.
Yep.
Somebody in the camp should have been smart enough to say, well, we need to go look for a weight scale. Let's put this guy on the. Let's see how many pounds he's over, because we're going to be putting in some double time work and getting this guy in the weight.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, there's nothing worse if he comes in at, you know, it's contracted for, 141 or 142. If he comes in at, 143.
Not for a title either.
Not for a title. despite both guys having a belt. But that's another
Lamont
argument.
Peterson, Lamont Peterson was very puzzled. He couldn't even give us an explanation. He didn't even know why it wasn't for a title when he came on and did an interview with us on here on Leaving the Ring.
What I think is Lamont Peterson, Lucas Matisse, if he loses, he will stay as Danny Garcia's mandatory challenger that way at 140.
Very strong possibility. You know, I mean, I think what Golden Boy is looking at is that why put up the Lucas Matisse and Danny Garcia? If Danny Garcia continues to win, that is a bigger fight. It's a bigger attraction. It's sexier.
Yeah, naturally, yes. You know, and I agree with you 100% on that. But back on the make and wait, I wouldn't be surprised. I'll be watching the weigh-in on my computer tomorrow since I'm here at home to see how I feel about Matisse. If he's making weight, it's something to watch out for. If he looks dried out. I feel like everyone's pick should be related around that. Just maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think it's a big deal.
I think it's a major big deal, especially with the history of what we've seen with Lucas Matisse. I mean, let me hear your prediction. What do you think happens? Does he come in knowing already that what's happened in the past? Does he come in with the proper weight, 141?
It looks
to me that the reason they might have also made it, you know, not at the weight scale of the championship belt title weight, but they made it a pound heavier or two, was because there was some struggle there with the Lucas camp.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all. If Matisse has no trouble making weight, I'm picking him in the later rounds. I think he's learned his lesson from starting slow between the Judah and Alexander fights. Both of them are close. He started slow, and that's why he lost. But if he's weight drained and dried out, I see Peterson jumping on him and winning a decision, or maybe I highly doubt a late knockout. But it all depends on what kind of shape Matisse is coming in.
God, this just reminds me of. I'm trying to think of the fight right now where they had to go back. And, Danny Garcia was in that position, right? Where they had to come back to him and talk to him whether or not he was going to take the fight with,
Eric Morales. Oh, God.
Because of the weight. And, you know, there was another fight recently that was in the same predicament where they had to go back. Here's a perfect example. Adrian Broner.
Oh, Broner, yep. Escobedo.
Yeah, Escobedo. They had to go ask Escobedo, hey, do you want to fight him? He's a lot heavier. Because here's one thing, and I think this is going to be easier to make happen. It's not going to be the same thing of Escobedo, okay? There is no title in the line for this one. So for Golden Boy, for Golden's sake, it would be an easier fight to negotiate. But the money of purse that was promised to Lucas Matisse is obviously the penalty would be, well, we're going to take a X amount of money, dollar signs, and give it towards Lamont Peterson because the fact he's sacrificing the weight now. Here's the thing. Lucas Matisse is not the fastest guy in the world. How much does the weight affect him? I don't think it affects him at all because he does come in as the bigger man every time on fight night.
He comes in at 150 pounds no matter what.
Exactly. That's where Lamont Peterson, though, I think where Lamont's got to take in play I would honestly have wanted, let me tell you this, if I was a fighter and I knew that this guy was struggling that weight, I would honestly want to make sure that he struggles to make that weight rather than getting a guy with plane delay, having a visa situation, show up and know that he didn't have to do shit to lose those extra little ounces or pounds to make the weight. You know what I mean? Because now you got a guy that's, you know, hey, his body's not as stressed, it's not as strained. He's going to come in, he's still going to feel fresh. You want a guy right now. I would be pounding on the table from Lamont Peterson's camp going, no. He needs to make the weight. Give him till 1 o'clock Saturday to make that weight. That's the thing that a good manager, would look at, focus on, jump on and say,
well,
we need the advantages
also,
any way we can.
We don't know yet. Maybe you never know. Maybe Lucas Matisse was doing push-ups on the airplane, and he's
maybe he got airsick. Maybe he got airsick, Brian.
Maybe he took that hydrochlorothiazide like Jay Leon loved it, and he'll come in underweight.
It was in the chicken? Is that what you're going to say? Eric Morales style?
Oh, God. Well, actually, I did quite a bit of research on that hydrochlorothiazide. And it's actually the same drug my grandpa takes.
Really? What is, now, okay, explain that to us. What does exactly
well,
this do?
Well, you know, I'm sure Gabe can give you a better insight, a lot better insight into it. But from what I understood, you wouldn't get prescribed it unless you have diabetes or high blood pressure.
Oh, wow.
And, well, since my grandpa's in his late 70s.
Right, which makes sense.
A little different than a 24, 25-year-old professional athlete.
How do you come up with an explanation for that? Let me ask you that. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I went to the doctor.
it was to cut weight. And, you know, the day before the fight, I don't know if anyone remembers, but Jay Leon was late to the scale, and he was a pound or a pound and a half overweight. And this drug does help you, from what I understand. It's a novice understanding at best, but it helps you rehydrate. Maintain water and I guess hydrate properly.
Right. Rehydrate properly after getting off the scale.
Exactly.
Wow. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for the excuses to come out for this, you know?
Well, you know, I've called Mayweather Promotions a couple times today, and naturally no one's responding right now.
You see, and here's the thing, too, because, you know, the money team is Mayweather Promotions doesn't have, they're not licensed. They don't have a license yet to be a promoter. And this is the second time. Now,
well,
of course,
third
still time.
Count Uriokis Gamboa.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, Uriokis Gamboa was with 50 Cent already. So,
but, I mean, he was in the gym for much of that time, though.
Yeah, much of that time. Yeah, exactly. But they can kind of exclude that. They can say, well, no, he wasn't with us. So,
absolutely.
Technically, they only have two fighters that it's back-to-back. Showtime, what does Showtime do? They're, obviously, they're not going to do anything because they just signed a massive deal with Floyd Mayweather.
Well, is that their responsibility, Showtime's? You know, I was following kind of Gabe.
Hey, they fired Antonio Tarver. They fired, I mean, they got the guy, you know what I mean?
True. They fired Tarver, but he was also an employee of Showtime.
Absolutely, yeah, you're right about that. You're right about that. So that's what throws me back is where's the responsibility fall to? I mean, the commissions, we already know what's going to happen there. These guys are just, you know, it's the blind leading the blind. I think it's really up to, and I haven't seen this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't really seen a whole lot of journalists out there on this, jumping on top of this, going, hey, this is two for two. What's going on here?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And
I mean, is everybody that concerned about getting a Floyd Mayweather, you know, a TMT hat or a shirt?
Does everyone really want the Floyd Mayweather press pass that badly?
Exactly.
It's not even like you. I mean, it's doing your job to when something comes out to investigate it. And a lot of people, I don't know if they're not willing or even worse, not capable. But we'll see.
I don't know. You know, it really puzzles me that here you have a guy. This is the ironic thing. You had a guy, Floyd Mayweather, was like, hey, you know, take the test. Let's clean up our sport. Why haven't you came out with a press release talking about what's happened to two of your fighters?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, from the Mickey Bay situation, I don't remember
There was no collateral damage with Mickey Bay. Mickey Bay was basically left out there to dry on his own. You know, Mickey Bay had to do his own PRing to get his name out of the mud, if you remember that.
I do. I remember him reaching out to Gabe, actually.
Yeah. You know, and that's what really surprised me. Now you got Love here, who he needs some love. Let's just say that. He really needs some love right now. Because, you know, this is a sucky part, and I strongly believe this. Fighters really don't, they're almost like children. They're very excluded from the real world of what's out there. Now, I'm not making an excuse, but what I'm I'm painting a picture for a lot of fight fans to understand that a lot of these guys, they put trust in people. Now,
in managers, trainers, promoters, naturally.
Yeah. Trainers and some of them can get a little fogged up by believing, like, I'm under the banner of the greatest fighter of all times right now. You know, I'm part of the money team and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not going to challenge whatever this man or whoever he's sending me to. Now, not to say that Floyd was sending his guys to a doctor or sending them to a conditioning coach, because that's just an assumption. We don't like doing assumptions here on Leaving the Ring.
Naturally.
But to clarify, what are the thoughts of the most vocal athlete of the world right now? Where is his thoughts about what's going on in his team? Let's be vocal about your – I mean, you don't want reporters to report the wrong shit. That's why major statement on All Access about Radio Raheem. You know, reporters, journalists making up crap, doing blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, here's your chance.
Here's your chance to clear it all.
And clean out your own closet.
Well, and it's not like with the money team. It's like some promoters that are disconnected from their fighters. With the money team, they all work out in the same gym. I got to be around them a lot in February at the Bunger-Smith fight here in Detroit. And you named me another promoter who's so close to his fighter, which is a good thing. But he does. You can't claim ignorance on what's going on with your fighters if you're that close to them.
No, you can't. Absolutely, you can't, you know?
Oh, but at the same time, though, then again, Floyd has never failed drug tests. We have to remember that. So.
Well, until we have proof, until we have anything, you know, and I don't want to make this that Floyd is the bad guy out of it, because he really isn't. It's at some point, there's got to be a mutual responsibility.
Naturally,
people. You know, and this guy just, it's under his name. But, see, look, if I own Leaving the Ring, if one of my riders or anybody that's associated with Leaving the Ring does anything that's not – it's just out of the ordinary, I think it's my obligation to kind of step out to the front yard and say, whoa, wait a minute. Let me clear this up. This is his reasoning. This is what happened. Or I don't agree with it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Dave – I feel like I've done quite a bit that's out of the ordinary.
Yeah. Anyways, but fight fans, you want to call in. You certainly can. 347-215-7598. Or make sure you download the app so you can listen live here. And you can call in directly from your app. Or you can hit us up on their leavingthering@gmail.com. We're going in a little bit about the money team, and I don't know if we're going in on it. We're making our points, okay?
We're just making observations on it, really.
Exactly, because I know I'm going to get a bunch of emails about how much, you know, oh, you just hate Floyd and this and that, and this is so far from the truth. I actually like Floyd a lot, man. I think he's a great entertainer. I think that he brings a lot to the sport. You know, he keeps the sport in the mainstream, that's where it counts, you know?
Yep.
That's like Canelo right now. Canelo really keeps the sport in the mainstream. He's the big cash cow. He's going to be one of the major cash cows, and even Floyd Mayweather understands that and sees that as well. Same thing with Adrian Broner. I mean, look, Adrian Broner he's still a new kid on the block, but for a new kid on the block, he became pretty popular in that block.
Well, he's become unpopular, which is the same as popular.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that the antics that he's doing are really just this is the thing with Adrian Broner. He either is going to really stun you, or he's going to really just make you go like, damn, I got to see what's next. What's up this kid's sleeve? What is he going to do next? I mean, throwing up the press conference, talking about his girlfriend.
Oh, no, not girlfriend,
Well, his, the fling.
Well,
right?
His, what's the politically correct term?
Booty call?
It wasn't his girlfriend because he is engaged. But, I don't know. I'm not sure what the politically correct term is for, believe it, his fuck buddy.
I don't know if that's the politically correct term there, Brian, but we'll go with that. You know, back in my days, we called it the booty call, you know. I was like, hey,
well,
yeah.
Well, you're getting old, Dave.
I am getting old, man. Because, you know, you know, when you had your...
Good thing we're not on network TV, network here.
I know. You know how many bleeps we'd be having right now?
Oh, God.
It'll be bleep, 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 bleep. But, hey, Adrian Broner, having a fiance, this kid is pretty brave. It's almost the way he disrespected her. Remember when he looked like he was going to give her a proposal ring?
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's like, brush my hair. Brush my hair. Jeez. This is the same thing. He brings out his fling out to the whole world for them to know about that he was sleeping around with Paul Emanadi, ex-girl. What, I don't know if that was his girlfriend or if it was his fling as well, you know?
And, you know, it's a mess. I find it highly entertaining, probably more entertaining than the fight will be, to be honest. seriously, though, this fight, Paulie's an okay fighter. Broner is, we're not sold yet, but we're pretty sure that he's going to beat the hell out of Malignaggi.
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know what, I think it's going to be competitive to the amount that we are thinking is going to be competitive, and then it's just gonna steamroll into the Broner show in those mid rounds. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, at the same time though, Malignaggi did he never beat Hatton, Cotto, and Khan, but for
right.
the rounds he was in those fights, he was a game fighter, especially in the Cotto fight. I mean, that was 8-9 years ago, probably now, but he'll give anyone rounds. He's not going to knock you out, obviously. He has, 5 knockouts and 30 fights. But I mean, he's got pillows on his goddamn hands. But, he knows how to fight.
That's,
he'll give anyone
rounds. That's my major concern there because, you know, Paul Emanadi, who's lost a lot of flavor, in my opinion.
Yep.
He's got older legs. He stays mm-hmm. in the pocket a little longer. The way he fought Amir Khan was not the Paul Emanadi of what we were used to seeing. He was more Jersey Shore pump fist with Amir Khan. And that's what I kind of expect. I'm expecting that with Broner. Now, the pillow punches, that's where it brings out the whole concern is because the fact is that Broner was able to take the best punches that were landed by Antonio DeMarco, who's got some heavy hands. You know, he's a strong guy.
At 135 he does, though.
At 135, yeah. But... was Paul Emanadi a really big puncher at 135? I mean, if he was at 135, do you think he'd be at 140? He wasn't that massive of a puncher.
No, it's true.
So I say that Broner is going to allow Paulie to have his semi-fun of 1, 2, 3 rounds, and then it's just going to turn into a Broner night. It's going to become a Broner fest. And the way Paulie's ex-girl had a boner fest with Broner. That's pretty much it's going to happen with Paul Emanadi. And I think the only thing that we could look forward to, I don't even know if we get that from Paulie anymore, is the crazy hairdo and the funny style of trunks when he comes out.
The predator-looking dreadlocks.
The predator, yeah, exactly. You know, we know that he's not going to be the predator in this fight. It's going to be Broner all the way. Who to me, Broner, he's, you know, you get some fight fans who are like, he's not exciting. I don't really care for him. I actually think he's exciting. I think the kid.
Oh, yeah.
He does a lot more than what Floyd does. I'll tell you that.
Love him or hate him outside the ring. Once he gets inside that ring, he makes fun fights. He tries that Mayweather Philly shell style. He's not as good at it, but he's more of an offensive. He's a lot more aggressive. And
he's a lot more daring. In my opinion.
That's the word. That's the word
caring.
I'm looking for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy that really wants to give the value of the fight fans money. You know, he just wants to get out there. He understands hey, listen, my mouth has sold the fight. Now my fists have to close the deal.
Do you think he understands that, or he just knows how to fight?
I think he just knows how to fight.
And Al Heyman understands the other part.
Al Heyman, oh, absolutely. Al Heyman understands that big part, you know.
They taught him that at Harvard.
He understands social studies, Al Heyman.
social studies. Christ, the guy has a master's from Harvard in economics.
Exactly. You know, ask Broner, and, you know, did you study social studies? Yeah, I got Twitter. I'm on Facebook. What are you talking about?
I got Instagram.
I got Instagram. I stock my Instagram. I heard you guys stock Instagram, too.
Now, other news today, though, talking about Heyman, though, is I've heard rumors that Deontay Wilder signed with him.
What?
And that's what I've heard today. I haven't had the time today to call JD's or try to get in touch with Deontay or anyone involved. But talk about odd timing for that.
Huh. I'm being hit up too really quick. I'll get back what you're talking about. Vincent Parra, who is the trainer of Marcito Gesta, he's moving up to 140. Yeah, he's moving up to 140. Josie looks like to be the next opponent. And Aaron Garcia is going next Friday to San Diego to do some work. So that's that's some good news there. But let's go back with Deontay Wilder. I mean, have we got any news about what happened last week? He got arrested over the weekend, over the Cinco de Mayo weekend.
The Mayweather fight.
So what update do we have on that? Have we clarified whether if it was a man, a woman, a beast?
Well,
what do we have?
Naturally, they can't clear. They can't. I mean, that's a victim's, what's it called? Protecting the victim. That's the phrase I'm looking for. Whether the victim, what the victim is, who the victim is, they won't be able to tell us that, naturally. I mean, that's just, that's how it always is. The fact that they usually do tell us he or she, I do find it kind of odd that they weren't able to specify. I mean, that's a 50-50. It's not like you're giving away the person's identity.
I heard there was a tiger missing from the Las Vegas circus arena. And a couple of chickens and a lamb.
Well, you got me, Dave. You got me. Actually, no, Big Tree lives in Vegas. That's who did it.
Oh, no. No, don't tell me that. Is that why I haven't heard from Big Tree for a minute?
I don't even know if he's listening tonight, but...
He probably is, man. I'm gonna put you on hold just for a second, brother. I'm going to pass you to Fight Fan. Thanks for calling in.
Alrighty. Yep.
Brian Frog from Leaving the Ring, great journalist, investigator for the team. You got to follow him. Follow him on his Twitter account, and you got to follow him on his articles. Guy just amazing. Does great, great work. Area code 210. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey, what's up, man? How y'all doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
Oh, good, man. Thanks for coming back, y'all. I got to stop taking breaks like that, man. Nah, it's good, man. I just say y'all got to take a little breather now and then. But I agree with what y'all are saying, man. I was like, I was calling in and I was enjoying that little conversation y'all were having. It's just crazy. I brought this up a couple of times, how the sport of boxing is kind of evolving. The sport is the same itself, but as far as like the entertainment, now we're in the social media era. We're in the reality era, heavy into reality. So I think that's what also helps Broner, Malignaggi, Mayweather fight, and you see the shows themselves. They have pyrotechnics. They have all the lasers, the shows that came from the UFC into WWE or WWF or whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? It's just crazy how the sport's changing. And I think that's to Mayweather's favor because I think back in the 80s when they didn't have all the entertainment and stuff, the kind of fighting style just wouldn't mesh with the public.
You know what? It's also saved a lot of careers. This social media have saved some careers. Issa Smith was a guy that, you know, nobody was interested in terms of networks. They didn't want to buy any of the fights that were offered. HBO didn't want to pick up any of the fights. So Issa Smith was kind of left on the shelf. He was a guy that was being juggled from promoter to management. He was a fighter without a home. I don't think that if there was no Twitter, no Facebook, and his career continued with being just kind of tossed from here and there, he probably would have just retired from the sport. But with the volume of noise that was coming from social media, I thought it just caught ears and eyes, and that's why we see him now with the money team. I'm just hoping that nothing comes from him being tested with anything in his system. Then we got 3 for 3. It's just like, to me right now, this is bad that this is kind of happening. You know, we want to clean up the sport, but man, it's a lot to take, man, within 2 years. You know what I mean? And, you know, I'm going to point this out. You know, like, I'm all for cleaning the sport. I want the sport to be clean. But am I the only one that wants to see it get clean kind of silently sometimes? Do I need to see Victor Conte keep going on his rant? I don't know. I guess I got to ask that to everybody else. Go ahead, brother.
I think it makes it look bad. I mean, with the exception of, like, Lance Armstrong, you know, I think there's a lot of people getting popped, or a lot of undercover things going off on the other major sports. But when boxing, it's you know, when that happens, it's such in a big light. You know, it's such, oh, here goes boxing again, you know. But I think it's a bigger problem in the UFC. I mean, I think half those guys are on, more than half those guys are on something or got some kind of phony prescription. But, yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. But how far do you think Jay Leon Love stumbles? I mean, as it is, most people thought he lost. I mean, I was at the fight, and even the pro Mayweather crowd, they booed the heck out of the guy, you know. And now with this, I mean, and then with social media, like you said, spreading it out. You know, social media is also good, but it's also spreading this out like wildfire. You know, it just, you know, I'm just wondering where he's going to go from here.
That's the thing, though, too. You know, I mean, social media has its pros and it has its cons. Obviously, the con is for Love right now because he's not getting any kind of love from social media. They're just bagging on him pretty bad. How far along did he drop? I don't know. That's something that's why I'm saying, listen, if you're going to be a promoter, you're going to be an agent, you're going to be a publicist, you're going to be anything in part of the business, and you're a fighter, you want to make sure you align yourself. And I've talked about this numerous times. You want to make sure that whoever's involved in your team has a purpose. And in boxing, a lot of times that a lot of these guys get to these certain points that the limits that they – or not limits, the what's the word I'm looking for? You know, they get to the point of their career where it's kind of out there already, but they don't really have anybody that can collectively take care of any damage if there was any. So the fighters basically left out there trying to figure out of how to clean up their mess. So right now, I haven't seen anything from the Love camp. I haven't seen anything from the TMT camp. I haven't seen anything really kind of coming out there and trying to kind of hush this up or get this kind of scooted under, you know. And I think Linus just put out, I don't think it was an Escalon or Top Prospect to, you know, drop real far. You're absolutely right. But with the exposure, you think with the exposure, even though we lost, it was that exposure. And I think the buildup of us wanting to see a rematch, I think that's kind of disappeared already. That's kind of destroyed. Now Love is really now kind of even further back of ever becoming a Top Prospect or any type of Escalon. It's going to have to be a lot of work. And I don't know if the money team or anybody part of the outside team has the experience of getting this kid to what they were hoping that their investment was going to get him to.
Yeah, they're young. I think they're still trying to figure out how they're going to run their show. You know, I know
they're still trying to figure out how to have a promoter's license. You know what I mean? That's how young it is.
Yeah. They got Mayweather as the nucleus. So I think that's what that's what's kind of holding it up right now. But we'll see what they go where they go from here. But I think Love, I mean, you know, he seemed like a good guy, but you know, he never was really. You know, he's still trying to make a name for himself. It's one thing if a name fighter got, you know, who's already made a name for himself, like Aaron Morales. You know, he got popped, and you know, he got the backlash, but it's not really going to hit him too bad. I mean, he was at the end of his career, but he was Eric Morales. But JVN Love was still, you know, making a name for himself. I think that kind of sets him back even more. And then with the weight issues also.
Well, here's a big, huge difference too with Eric Morales getting popped. And you know, they didn't really have to do any type of collateral damage because they knew the fan base of Eric Morales. You know, it's just like with Floyd Mayweather. Let's say something happens. I mean, look at the whole mess with the domestic violence. Did it really damage his image completely? No, it really didn't. Why? Because he had a major loyal following. Eric Morales is in the same light. Very loyal family. They don't care. They're like, oh, he got Papa steroids. I don't care. He could have went in 200 pounds, and a lot of fight fans wouldn't have cared. They're just Eric Morales fans, not fans of the sport. And I think that's a huge difference. You know, when I talk to certain people, and they say, oh, yeah, I like boxing. I used to like boxing, but I stopped watching ever since Mike Tyson. But then you weren't a fan of the sport. You were a fan of an athlete. That's apples and oranges. There's just two different things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hope everybody watches this week, and, I won't take any more of your time to appreciate the passion. But, I'm expecting a beautiful fight. I hope it turns out, because, I'm a big advocate. I'm always telling people to watch fights. And when they go good, people always, send me good texts. When they go bad, they always say, oh, this is what you're always talking about. But I think
it'll be good. That's what you got to do, brother. That's what you got to do, man. I always say, be the Jehovah's Witness of boxing. Knock on everybody's door. Let them know, man, there's a fight tonight.
I'm a walking billboard. Yeah, they know me.
There you go.
Yeah, I appreciate it, though.
All right, man.
The passion.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. Right. Fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. Find Waldo. Remember that? Right now we're doing that with the Dark Cloud. Where is the Dark Cloud at? He's an hour late here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Got to find out what's cracking with him, man. Anyways, but again, 347-215-7598. I'm going to try to call in Gabriel, see if we can get a hold of him. I don't think he's home yet. He was kind of delayed from the airport, and his air flight was delayed. Maybe it was Lucas Matisse, Maybe he robbed Lucas Matisse. Lucas Matisse had a burglary, and his flight was delayed. I think Gabriel Montoya had a big part in that, man. You don't never know, man, with Gabriel, the Dark Cloud. The guy always has something up his sleeve. Something always going on with the Dark Cloud. Fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. Angulo is back in the mix. He's going to be facing Arizona Lara. I don't know how a lot of fight fans feel about that. I'd like to hear your guys' opinion, man. But me, it just, styles make fights. And sometimes there's some styles you shouldn't face immediately. I know he's with Virgil Hunter, who's the trainer of Andre Ward. And now he's the trainer of Amir Khan. He had Fernando Guerrero, who had just recently lost. And it was a good, exciting fight with Kid Chocolate. Peter Quillen. Almost went kind of brain dead there for a moment. And, he's been working out with that camp. He's been doing his thing. He wanted to kind of have a change since being released from the ICE. He was contained by there wrongfully. And he said, I wanted to change. I need to find a new trainer, kind of, refresh him, get him back into the mix. And now, I think, he's three fights down the line. And now he's getting in with a really seasoned, very difficult style to face and beat. Arison Lari, who had just recently fought, he came up with a draw with, I'm trying to get a hold of Gabriel at the same time, man, so you have to mind me if I'm pausing a lot for a quick second here. And Vance Modarossian, had a draw of Vance Modarossian. That fight, a lot of us thought that Lara was going to go in there and catch him in the down the road and knock him out, but it didn't happen. Now he's going to be facing El Perro. I could be way off on this one here, but am I the only one that thinks that this is such a bad move for Angulo so quick right now? Would we have been that upset to watch him build back up for Arizlandi fight? I mean, how many of us think that he's going to be outboxed, outmoved? He's not going to be able to go off and tee off as good as he can against Arison Lari. To me, I just don't understand why the move was made. I don't know. Maybe we need to get Virgil Hunter. He can explain to us. But when you talk about picking up one of the best 154-pounders out there right now and one of the most difficult guys to face in terms of styles to face and try to conquer and outmaneuver and outplan, Lara spells just destruction. You got to make sure that you're on top of your A game. I don't know. I could be wrong, man, but to me, it just does not seem like a great move. I'm going to patch in a fight fan right now. 347-215-7598. Be sure you download the mobile app on your Android or your iPhone and tune in live, man. Let's get area code 209. We got an area code 209. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring Radio. What up, big dog? What's up? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, shoot. Nah, I didn't even expect it to pick up. What's on my mind? I'm thinking about that Peterson and that Matisse fight, man. That's all that's been in my mind this whole week. And, people are saying that this is a 50-50 fight, right? And,
right.
I don't think so, man. And it's, I know, like Peterson has this health issue, you know, and I don't know how the drug testing is going with that fight. I don't have any knowledge of it, but if he's going in there with, like, already a disadvantage because he doesn't have his body doesn't produce the right, I guess, testosterone going in, or a guy that has, you know, that's just naturally... You know, he's all right.
Yeah, he's got the he produces what a 7-year-old male would produce. That's what he's missing.
Yeah, he can't rub one out, like he can't come. So he goes to the doctor and he's like, yeah, I need help because I don't have a hard on. And then, you know what I mean? He gets help, and then I was thinking about it, man, and. Yeah, it's going to be tough for him to not, you know, it's not 50-50 to me, man. I think, like, one day that's going to be an excuse, or that's going to be the reason why he's going to start losing fights, is because it's not even, and there's got to be a way where it could be even. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing with me. I think it is, to me, it's a 50-50 fight. One is that Peterson has kind of, he's got tremendous boxing skills. There's nothing, you can't take that away from him.
I agree with that, yes.
You know, but he still, to me, he has something to prove. And he's fighting like he needs something to prove. So, where Matisse is not a guy that has, he's not a Timothy Bradley, where Bradley can adjust on the fly. He gets caught, he can adjust to it. I mean, he didn't do that much of a great adjustment with the Povetkin fight, but when he fought Lamont Peterson, you know, it was all Timothy Bradley. It was all the Desert Storm that night.
Right.
So, Lucas, definitely, he can't have any wrinkles in his game. He's got to go in there. Not with just the mentality, I got power in my hands, but he's got to come in with the mentality, in order to make this power in my hands a factor, I got to land it. And not saying he won't land it with Lamont Peterson, but Lamont's fought some, he fought, you know, Victor Ortiz, got dropped twice, got back up. He was able to clear the cobwebs. Not sure entirely if it was because all due to him making an adjustment or Victor Ortiz falling apart. But he's a guy that's been able to take Amir Khan's shot. So he's been in with some pretty good solid punchers. I don't know how much of a solid, you know, Matisse obviously is at a different level of punching power than those guys. But Lamont's got a good beard. I think it's safe to say that. He's got a good beard on him.
Yeah.
So,
man, Lucas Matisse, man, that guy punches hard, dude. Like,
oh, he's a savage, man. There's no doubt about that. He's definitely a savage.
That dude, man, doesn't he come in heavy after he makes the weight?
Comes in like at 150. So when Brian Fall came in, who's our writer, you know, he made some really good points. One is that the flight was delayed. He had visa problems. He was burglarized. There's some issues here. So he just got in today. So if any chance of him losing weight, he's got to do some double time in order to make sure that he's in weight scale condition for this fight. So that raises some questions. So now to me, it spells even a much more interesting fight.
Yeah.
And really, it really, the Lamont Peterson's card, I want to know how it's going to be played out. Do they press for Lucas to make weight, or do they end up pulling the Broner card where they just get bought out and decide to get in there with a much heavier Lucas Matisse? This is an interesting scenario for both camps and the scenario of the fight game for fight fans to kind of follow.
Yeah, that's news to me. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
All right, Dez, well, I'm going to put you for calling in. I appreciate it.
All right.
There you go, fight fans. 347-215-7598. I apologize that Gabriel Montoya hasn't called in, man. But he was, you know, like I said, he had a fight. His flight was delayed. He's running late. And I'm trying to get up our fight schedule here. So, you know, we know that Devon Alexander, who's fighting on the undercard of the Peterson and Matisse fight, he's going to be fighting Purity. And it wasn't the fight that a lot of us were looking for. Not a lot of people were even talking about that fight. What other news that I've been hearing? I got to give a shout out to Bad Left Hook, man. These guys are really putting in a lot of work, you know. They do a lot. I do most of my checking. And that quote that I was talking about came from them, about Mosley. I'll retire when I'm ready. And that was from Scott Christ. He was the one that put out that article and even made it, you know, talked about how, you know, James Toney was giving Shane Mosley advice. First off, I wonder if Shane even understood the advice that James Toney, because we know how James talks, man. It just hasn't been, it's really hard to even understand like three words out of the guy and stuff. You understand his cuss words and stuff. But Schaefer is, because Floyd Sr., the father of Floyd Mayweather Jr., and said that Canelo, if they were going to fight, it had to be at 147. And Richard Schaefer, who was the CEO of Golden Boy, he said there is no weight issue for the Floyd Canelo. It's going to be one of those back and forth things. It's going to probably end up trying to you know, put a smoke screen there saying that it's going to boil down to a weight issue, which in reality, it's really not. There's the money there of trying to make that fight happen. There's really no money there. So you end up with that. We had Steve Kim. He broke it down. He explained it really, really well. So I'm not sure if that's going to happen. Maybe it will. Maybe, you know, we'll get our wish, because even though everybody's in a rush to see a fight that shouldn't happen right away, and, you know, you're thinking about the fight deal that Floyd Mayweather has signed on, and we're like, oh, we got to get it in. I'm sitting back, and I still really can't think of the next name that he could really – Devon Alexander is fighting this weekend. Do we really want to see that? I don't know. I had a couple emails say, how about Danny Garcia? I mean, come on, you know, he throws a really mean right hand. But I'm like, I don't want to see that either. Unfortunately, there's a lot of great fights for Danny Garcia. It just doesn't make any sense for Floyd to get in there, you know. Andre Berto, he's got a lot of, I don't even know, where do I even start with Andre Berto, to tell you the truth? I would probably have to drink like, you know, a six pack of Pepsi just to get the thoughts, you know, put them in line in order to make a case for Andre Berto, man. I'd have to give a couple of you guys some 420s out there so you guys can get to kind of understand a case buildup for Andre Berto to get the fight with Floyd Mayweather. So it just kind of falls down on the lap of Saul Canelo Alvarez, which a lot of us last year were saying, man, no way. No way in hell. Raggedy Andy can't get that fight. But it just looks more realistic. Because if, you know, you sit there and say, well, you know, Robert the Ghost Guerrero out of the Gilroy got it, why can't Canelo get it? But here's the huge difference is the market value. You know, Robert got a great following in the Bay, but how does the Bay's a speck compared to Mexico? That's a whole country there. Plus all the Latinos here in the States. So he's got some leverage there to come in into the dealing table, to sit there across the money team and say, nah, well, you know, I don't think Canelo can make 147. And I think Floyd is going to stick to his guns and say, if that's the scenario plan that they're throwing out there, you know he's going to stick to 147. Because the excuse is going to be, well, I fought here at 147 with Robert. I'm not going to be jumping up, fluctuating my weight. I'm older. I can hear it all. I can hear the whole conversation. So it just leaves you the drawing power of two egos going at it. And let me put it this way. If Pacquiao couldn't make Floyd budge and what he wanted, what is Canelo going to do? I don't know. Fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. Let's patch in a fight fan right here, right now. 957. Here it is. 951. I'm sorry. Erico 951. You're on live right now. Leaving the ring. What's on your mind? Erico 951. You're on live right now. What's on your mind? Okay. We're going to try to get a hold of Mr. Gabriel Montoya so we can get his take of the upcoming fights, and he can probably pull up the fight schedule as well. I don't think we can get a hold of him, though. I'm trying our hardest here to... I got another caller from area code 951. Let's see. Area code 951, 551. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind?
Miles is listening to the show, man.
All right, brother. I'll put you back in hold, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Peace.
So, anyways, let me see if I can get that fight schedule, and we can get down our predictions here. Fight fans, if you want to, call in, talk some boxing, throw your rant, kind of, you know, we can recover what we talked about. It's not a problem. 347-215-7598. We definitely can, but if not, that's fine here. And courtesy of SB Nation, Bad Look, Left Hook. Website, I'm gonna use their fight schedule on Saturday, March 18th at the Boardwalk Hall, Atlantic City, New Jersey. Showtime, back in the mix, but Showtime Extreme. I'm gonna go with that first. Showtime Extreme. Sean Porter is gonna be fighting Fildo Greco in the welterweights, 10 rounds. Sean Porter with the distance with the kid Julio Diaz Jr., who kid just went the distance with Amir Khan. So the criticism of Sean Porter that people were having, you kind of have to put that behind you a bit, because Sean Porter was facing a illegitimate Diaz. Because the Diaz that a lot of us were talking about was, couldn't take a punch, had a soft chin, he was going to get knocked out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and it didn't happen. So you got to now put the value of what Porter had to go through with Kid Diaz. So I like him in this fight with Greco. So I'm going to go with Porter. I'm going to say he's going to go another 10 rounds. You know, thing about Porter is that it's not going to be the greatest exciting fight. A lot of guys were fight fans were high on him, but he just he's a fighter that fills in the slots. That's basically how I take him, you know. And then later on that night, you're going to be, of course, you're going to see Alexander versus Lee Purdy at the welterweights, 12 rounds for the IBF title. And Devon Alexander, man, remember when everybody was high on him when he was going to fight Tim Bradley? Everybody was really calling for that fight. That fight needed to be done. He needed to get in there. Because, you know, fight fans believed that was the fight that was going to save the sport of boxing. But Devon Alexander, man, he's had his struggle. I'm not an Alexander fan, man. I got to be honest. I'm just really, really not. I'm going to watch the fight because it's boxing, but it's one of those fights where, you know, you're going to tweet more. Rather than watch, you're going to watch in between rounds. You're going to watch, out of the 3 minutes, you'll probably watch 2 minutes of the round. I'll be really surprised if it's going to be an exciting fight, you know. But I don't even have a pick for that fight, to tell you the truth, you know. Devin Alexander, just because of the fact that it's always off and on with this fight that who's really supposed to be fighting, who's supposed to be getting in there with the UK fighter. I can't even think of the kid's name, man, because he just keeps falling out of injury after injury. That it can really mess up Alexander. It can really mess up his game plan. To me, that sometimes it was supposed to be Cal Brook. That's who he was supposed to fight. He was supposed to fight Cal Brook, and you know, had a schedule again. Now it's just falling apart. You gotta wonder, man, how much strain in the brain for a fighter that you prepare, you get ready, you want to get in there and you want to do your thing, and then it just doesn't happen. So, you know, it's not overtraining, but it definitely could be overthinking your strategy with a particular fighter that you're hoping and expecting to face, and then everything just kind of gets turned around on you. Now you're going in there with now you got to come up with a new game plan, which when there was time, I think, maybe, I don't know. You know, it really depends on how fast the fighter is able to adapt. But I kind of expect a lot of fill-out rounds, trying to figure out what you're going to do, what game plan to execute that's going to be the best execution to go after, Lee. So I don't think that fight's going to it's gonna be the appetizer that we're looking and hoping it's going to be. The main course, Lamont Peterson and Lucas Matisse, I think, even at the catchweight at 141, with nobody can explain why, not even the fighters. They don't understand. Lamont Peterson doesn't get it. Fight fans, I don't get it. But that fight, even though we had one of the callers didn't think it was a 50-50 fight, but I mean, I'm in the majority of the rest of the fans out there that this is a 50-50 fight. Otis Griffin is going to be fighting on the Extreme this weekend as well. Giving a shout out from NorCal. Of course, we stick together here. Brian Fogg, stop breaking into my train of thought here. Anyways, it is a 50-50 fight, but everything else that's kind of came behind right now of new, the burglary, the visa flight delay, showing up today, the history of last minute shedding the weight. To me, that comes in a lot of play. To me, a fighter needs to have some type of calmness before going into the storm. I don't care if you're a big puncher, you know, but you have to have a mindset. And if you have three or four distractions, it depends on the individual. I'm not saying that all fighters. So the scenario I'm throwing out there doesn't really, apply to everybody, every fighter out there. But it's one that we got to play with a little bit here. And play with it meaning that you got to throw it out there. You got to kind of look into it and say, well, hey, this could be a factor. If you're a betting man, you know, you look at basketball and you see, you know, the front lead guy. He had knee problem. You got to look at that. Football, the receiver, he's got a hip problem. You look into that. Same thing with boxing. You got to look into the whole aspect, not just if these two guys going to step into the ring. Got to look at the whole realm, the whole circle. And the circle with this one is that burglary, visa problems, weight issue, how focused. Or how calm is he going to be? Because now things are in a rush. He's in a rush. He's got to go. Got to get it going. Got to get there. Got to get the hotel. Got to get you doing this. Got to get you in that, doing that. That's a lot, man. If you really think about it, that's a lot. I can't do. I'm trying to tweet and talk on the radio show. That's a lot for me. And I get stressed. I'm trying to tweet, talk on the radio show, and get a hold of Montoya, the Waldo, right now. We haven't been able to find. He went AWOL on me. You know? I keep saying this over and over. I think that Gable was part of the visa problem, and he burglarized Lucas Matisse. Let's see if we can get a hold of him. I'm going to try one more time. before I end it, because I think we're pretty much, I'm pretty much out talked of what I wanted to talk about. My rants here on Leave the Ring. And I believe we got a hold of Waldo, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. I finally found him.
Good Lord, I'm sorry. I'm like totally jinxed myself. Look, I'll be there by 5.
We
actually got delayed in the on the tarmac after I turned off my phone. They were like, oh, and by the way, we're going to be here for about another 40 minutes sitting on the tarmac while we wait to take off.
When it got delayed, let me ask you this. When it got delayed, and they obviously they fixed the visa and everything, what was the state of mind of Lucas Matisse? We know you had something to do with that, Gabriel.
Yeah, that was me doing that. It was me, Manny Pacquiao, and his armed contingent, slowly giving out cash and rice to local people and buying votes. I don't know if you saw that today, that him and his wife, Chinky, have won in their province. But I don't know if you saw that story earlier this week that said that Manny Pacquiao was accused by a local chairman of buying votes with rice and cash and then beating up the competition. Or I don't even know if that guy was actually his competition, but he was complaining about it. And so Pacquiao allegedly, along with his people, beat them up. Beat him to a pulp, I think, is what the Manila Times said, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if there's actually going to be charges filed, but if anybody watches Vice TV, particularly the HBO version, not just the web series or the website, they did a piece about, I think in their first or second episode, about Filipino politics. And when I read that story, I was like, oh, that just sounds like Pacquiao figured it out over there.
Pacquiao was writing again? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he basically...
I mean, D-Source, my bad. D-Source was writing again, huh? Hey, really quick, before we get into all that, though, I'm going to pass in a fight fan that's been waiting patiently. He hit me up on Twitter, letting me know. He's got something big to say. Area code 951, what's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yep, go ahead, bro. You're on live.
Great. Yeah, I was thinking, about the Mayweather-Canelo fight. I mean, I was reading, that the there was not even a million bikes possibly, right, with the Guerrero-Mayweather fight. So I didn't even buy the fight because I said, you know what, I already know the outcome. But what I'm thinking is if the fans start saying and sticking together and say, we're not going to buy the next fight if it's not Canelo, and let Showtime know this, and we, start creating an outcry saying, hey, fight tough competition, fight Canelo, or we're not going to buy the fight. And I think, I don't know if we can band together and make it happen.
Here's the problem, though. It's not going to matter because the deal wasn't about who he has to fight. The deal was made on how much they were going to pay him. That was already set. All they had to do was approve. They have to approve the list. So as long as they approve it, Floyd is not going to care if you don't buy the pay-per-view. He gets his money either way. Showtime guarantees him the money. That's the biggest problem right now. That's where Showtime effed up, in my opinion. What do you think, Gabriel? I think they screwed up. They did one of the poorest negotiations that a network could do.
I think at this point, Showtime it's all in-house over there. I mean, Steven Espinosa is their former counsel, and as nice a guy and as accessible a guy on Twitter as he seems to be, everything is kind of just falls towards them. It's always positive spin towards Golden Boy. This was not about anything more than establishing a feud. And I can't tell who they're establishing it for. I'm not sure if it's the money team, Floyd's promotional outfit without a promoter's license. I think it's really Golden Boy and Heyman. And that's what we saw in the lead into that pay-per-view, But, I mean, to your point specifically, so I don't go on one of my rants, but to your question, I wrote this like 2 years ago, I think it was, an article called, The First Step is Admitting You Have a Problem. And it was to the fans who buy shitty pay-per-views that they're not happy with. If you don't get the fights that you want, and then the pay-per-view numbers come out and it's a million buys, well, who is to blame, there's an old saying in the con game, there's one born every minute, and there's two to take him. And I think that's basically what you have here, is the networks and the promoters are the two, and the fans that buy the pay-per-view are the ones that are being taken. And I think you guys have a lot more power than you realize as consumers. Don't buy the pay-per-views. Find some other way to get it. You know what I'm talking about. And do it that way. Let them know. I mean, I wouldn't buy another Robert Guerrero pay-per-view. I didn't buy this one. I wouldn't buy it because you already knew who was going to win. And regardless of how good the other. Do you really feel that was worth $70? I didn't.
Well, I went to my
aunt. But I don't. Nice. But I don't think. I don't think he's going to fight Canelo next. I think it's either going to be Devin Alexander, or in a surprise, maybe Juan Manuel Marquez. But you're not going to ever see Floyd face. I mean, we've been saying this for years. We'll wait till the next one. He's going to fight somebody tough. And they're all kind of tough. They're fighters, you know. But, I mean, Victor Ortiz, his first defense was Floyd Mayweather. That's not a smart first defense. That was a sacrifice by Golden Boy to be in the Mayweather business. Just like Showtime is sacrificing $32 million a fight in order to build the fighters around Floyd on his card, they're willing to pay that money. It's pay to play. You got to spend money to make money. And at the end of these six fights, they'll start to make money. But it really ultimately comes down to, I mean, the quality, you guys aren't in control of it. Floyd, like, you know, I was reading this or watching this documentary on the escape artist Houdini, and it reminded me of Floyd Mayweather, because the greatest thing that Houdini did was not getting out of any of those contraptions. His greatest feat was convincing you, even though he controlled every aspect of the promotion, from what he was going to get out of, what the feat was, all of it. He convinced the audience that what they were seeing was dangerous and death-defying. And that's what Floyd does. He convinces you. I don't know who's wrestling with a wildebeest in the background, but I can hear you. The greatest thing that that Floyd does is convince you that maybe – and you can see it in the media. They start out going, oh, it's a mismatch. And they look at the 11-1 Vegas odds, and they go, oh, this is a mismatch. Then about a month before the fight, after watching all the promotional hype and BS that Floyd is executive producing, suddenly you got guys that know better going, you know what? I'm picking Robert Guerrero. You know what? He's dangerous. This is a tough fight. Now, I said it was a tough fight in February. February 19th, to be exact, but that was days after the Berto fight, which I witnessed live, and
I thought it was going to be a tough fight.
You know? You were consistent from day one, and that's different than changing your view, I think, down the line.
Right.
You know, yeah, you stuck with it, and you also acknowledged, you know, this is a long shot. There's a difference there. But I saw guys flip from this isn't that good of a fight or indifference to this is a really tough fight. I went the other way. I thought it was going to be a tough fight, and the more I watched a video, the more I went, the guy doesn't stand a chance. But so I think, you know, on some level, really what it comes down to is the consumer not listening to us, not listening to anything other than your knowledge of the fight game. You've watched fights your whole life. You know better.
Take Canelo out of the list. What do we have?
Nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely.
There's nothing in that list. I mean, Devin Alexander, really? You know, that's the only hope. Lucas Matisse. I mean, all the guys that are on the list are like 140 pounders.
Yeah, Danny Garcia.
He's not beating Floyd. Not on any planet.
Right.
Or in any reality.
Bree Mayfield's looking for a fight. You know, he wants Danny. Why don't we just give him Floyd?
Wow. Look, you got all the 140s, which is a nice division, but they're 140 pounders. You know, like I said, this is more about a Showtime establishing a brand with Heyman and Golden Boy than it is really about Floyd. Floyd's just the loud product that they're selling. They're doing it smarter than when they did it with Mike Tyson. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What do you guys think of – I was noticing how Mayweather made a little friendly coalition with Adrian Broner, and I'm thinking that's another guy that may have the athleticism and the power to even compete with a Mayweather, but they're saying they'll never fight because they're best friends or he's my big brother or whatever. But
yeah,
even Broner would have been
– they're trying to build him into the future, and I got to be honest, I don't think Broner's smart enough to beat Floyd. I don't think he's mentally strong. If things started going south after five or six rounds, I think his ego is like
he's not ready for it.
No, I think Floyd would undress him, and he would fall apart, sort of like David Reed fell apart against Felix Trinidad, mentally first and then physically.
But give it 2 years from now. If Floyd's still in the game, I think that's the fight that a lot of us are want. They're going to – you know, we want to see. You know, we always want to see the upcoming star take out the outgoing star. So it really depends, man. I mean –
that's
right,
one
bro,
of the beauty. I don't like UFC, but that's one of the things that I do like about it. The fights are competitive. You don't know who's going to win, but in some of these fights,
yeah.
I already know who's going to win. It's a given.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's some like that in UFC, like the John Bones Jones fights. any fight that Chael Sonnen appears to be in, you know, if he's fighting an elite guy. But those are fewer and far between than they are, it seems, in boxing anymore, you know. But there's some days where I just look at it and I wonder. I remember when I first started writing and when people would find out what I do, they'd go, one, they'd ask, you know, do you cover the UFC? But then after that, they'd say, is boxing fixed? And I always say no. And now my answer is much more complex than no. You know, it's a lot to it.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, you know, what the future holds. As far as Floyd, I just think he's in a different league. And I don't just mean that in terms of his skill and class. I mean, he's going to pick the fight. He's going to decide who he faces. They're going to agree to his terms. All those things are going to be shaded in his favor. I would say boxing isn't fixed so much as it's shaded, you know, towards the winner, depending who the winner is supposed to be on any given night. So, and you can do that with the judges, you can do that with the venue, the weight, the ref, whatever.
Three names, and, just three names pop in my head that I only thing I can think of. Alexander first, Marquez, or a rematch with Cotto.
What about Peterson?
It all depends on what happens to Peterson, I think, you know? I don't know. Anyways, hey, thanks, brother, for calling in. I'm going to put you on hold, okay?
All right. Yeah, thanks so much, man.
You know, here's the thing that I kind of find interesting is Kyrgios Canelo Alvarez, who's almost made his name in the beginning by fighting smaller guys when he moved up to 154, won his title from a guy that had to jump up and wait, wasn't a natural 154, and Floyd Sr. throws out there on Bad Left Hook website saying that if I have to be at 147.
Right, and he confirmed it over on boxing scene. Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like well, you know, you did it to guys, we're going to do it to you. You know, you were making guys jump up in weight, but we're going to make you jump down in weight. And I was pointing this out here, Gabriel. And I don't know what your thoughts. I want to hear what you got to think about this, but what I was saying was that, of course, the real situation is that the money, it's going to be a money situation, you know. To that's why Steve Kim was on saying that it's not going to happen because there's a money factor here.
Right.
But the way the Floyd's camp's going to try to disguise it is with now a weight issue, an agreement of weight class of where they should meet.
This is why when you look back at the Manny Pacquiao negotiations, you have to look at all of them, and you have to admit that the second one did happen and that there was indeed a third. Who keeps putting up obstacles in negotiations, and who is like, all right, fine, I'll do it. You know, I'll do your testing. You can have 60-40. Let's just fight. You know, Floyd generally puts up obstacles. You know, and he kind of does the whole, I'm in charge, I've worked hard to be at this point. And that's, I guess, true. But at the same time, you can't have it both ways. Don't tell me to tell you that you're great when all you ever do is kind of handicap the competition before they ever get to you. It's like giving credit to the bull for killing, or for the bull, the matador for killing the bull. Well, what about all those other guys that were stabbing the bull and taunting it and hitting it with spears long before you ever entered the ring? That's kind of what Floyd does when he negotiates. He bleeds the bull down until it's at its weakest point. Then he comes and kills it, puts his foot on it, and goes, look how great I am. That's basically what he does, you know? I mean, call me a hater, but you can't deny how good I am at metaphors.
Now, you know, before you, because you were, you know, and missing in action there for a while.
I was. I'm sorry.
I'll throw out the topic here. I had my rant, and so, like I said, if you came on, we were going to probably just retouch on some of the stuff that I was discussing here on earlier on Leaving the Ring, because obviously we want to hear your take and inside info if you have any about the love situation. But here was my take about what's going on with TMT. My question was, which I could be wrong because I haven't seen it. I'm looking, I'm kind of scrolling down on certain things, trying to find if where's the coverage of 2 for 2 for the TMT team, two guys getting popped, two guys coming up, something in their system, and when's enough of using the doctor excuse?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, now granted, Fight Hype was one of the ones that the first people to put it out. You know, so I'll give them that. They're actually doing the coverage, but But remember back 3 years ago, almost four, well, it's 3.5 years ago. I think the negotiations were like December, January. And when Pacquiao decided not to do that testing, what a witch hunt it was. I mean, media was like, take the test. You had guys chanting it. It was bad out there. And I had guys getting mad at me for not outing Pacquiao or not joining into the mob. And now we've got two guys. And really, if you think about it, there's the rumor about Floyd testing positive, not once but three times. There's Gamboa, who has been in that gym and then linked to the Miami Clinic that's you know, tearing up Major League Baseball with the people that are listed on that little TRT cabal. And now you've got two guys that are actually – now, Mickey Bay is a different case, in my opinion, but now you got Jaylion Love. Yeah, where's the coverage? And wouldn't there be pitchforks outside the wild card if this was that gym as opposed to Floyd's?
Right now, Raymond Ramirez asking on Twitter, out of curiosity, why was Love caught after the fact? Why not before the fight took place? Well, like Brian Foghat came on and discussed was that he didn't make weight. So he had to go and take off, and the drug and what he had took, the supplement that he had took was, you know, for diabetics, and it gets you back, I guess, rehydration correctly. So that's why he wasn't popped before the fight. I think it was taken, the supplement was taken after the fact.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it could be to help him replenish. What I've heard from different people, and Steve Kim actually wrote a really nice story about it called The Love Story on Max Boxing. And he hit sources, I hit sources. I wasn't able to work the story yesterday, but everybody that I talked to said it pushes it out. It can push out water, like really fast. When I mentioned it to one of my sources, and I know everybody's going to say Victor Conte, no, although he did say, yeah, it pushes water out. One of my good sources that's a user and also somebody that just knows that kind of – or a former user, I should say, but also just knows that whole dark arts. When I mentioned it to him, he just said, yeah, there's no other reason to take that but to push water out and get it – you know, get you down to weight. And it only lasts like an hour. You only need to take it for an hour, and it'll help. I haven't done the full research on it. You know, it's not like all the other cases. I've been in transit, obviously. I'm kind of moving between two cities, so I just didn't sit down and do it. Steve said, I got this. But from what I understand, you know, that drug, you know, it's interesting because another guy got popped on that card for furicide. Furosemide. I always screw up these names. The thing that Chavez Jr. took.
Right.
So there's two guys taking it. I mean, I had some guy trying to argue with me yesterday for I think Boxing News 24/7 or some, I forget the name of the site. And he was trying to say that it is not a performance enhancer, that it's, you know, even if it's a diuretic, it's not a performance enhancer. And that's just flat out wrong. Here's the deal. You know, performance enhancing is kind of a misleading term. It doesn't mean necessarily that your performance is super enhanced and that you're necessarily going to win. A diuretic certainly is going to make you bigger, stronger, faster. But a big part of this event, boxing or MMA, is making the weight and how you recover from that weight. You know, most guys are out of their weight class, but they're shredding down, you know, shrinking down using drugs or other means to get down in weight and to a weight class they probably don't belong in. Obviously, his body is telling him, you can't make 160 anymore. If you need to take drugs, and this is all allegedly. We don't know exactly the details of what or when. He hasn't admitted it. You know, we'll see what sources inside that camp ultimately say. I mean, Leonard Ellerbe seems to be taking it very serious, but he also, you know, he said that about the Bay situation. And the Bay situation is different, though, and you can still listen to that episode of The Naked Truth that's on there. I'll eventually print it, but I've kind of been working on periphery parts of that story, namely that clinic, the Las Vegas Health Clinic. But the bottom line is this. If you're taking something that helps your body do something that it wouldn't be able to do without the drug, that's a performance enhancer, especially if you know, you're not doing what the other guy's doing, you know, naturally dehydrating or however it is that guy's making weight without a drug. You're not doing that. You're taking something that helps push it out. And then the next day, or let's say this drug is made that you take it and it helps you to replenish. helps you to suck water back in. Well, it's on the banned list, for one. It's probably on there for a reason, because diuretics are used either to push water out to make weight, or they're there to dilute whatever drug that you had, and you could run a bunch of water through and get that drug out, or at least dilute your system to the point where it won't show up. So it's a performance enhancer, it's a masking agent, it's a banned substance, it's illegal to take. Sorry, but yeah, it counts as a PED. So that argument, just because it's made for diabetics, well, I'm pretty sure, you know, we're going to find out that he's not a diabetic. You know, and if he was,
right,
then he should know better and get a medical exemption beforehand. As for why they weren't caught beforehand, it's because Floyd's people, you know, as much as he talks about cleaning up the sport, he's certainly not cleaning up his own gym or his own stable. And, if you know, they were reporting this week that he's going to make an estimated $90 million this year. Now, I don't know exactly how many guys are in his stable. Let's say there's 5 to 10, maybe let's say even 20. Talking to Vada and looking at the numbers, I know that for one fighter to do 365 testing like Donaire, it costs $20,000. Now, Floyd makes $90 million. He's only got 10 fighters. He could afford it. Put them all in a 365 program. Put himself in a 365 program, preferably Vada, because there's just far too many questions surrounding USADA. Now we're finding out, the Matisse thing and Peterson, they might have contracted testing with USADA, but then it never happened. Pauly Malignaggi saying the same thing about him and Broner. Broner, that's the second fight he's been involved in with USADA testing, where all of a sudden the testing was canceled or it just didn't happen at all. There's just way too many clouds of suspicion hanging over that group, USADA, as it pertains to boxing. And if people say, how could a group like that be corrupt? Then you don't know your anti-doping history. Go and look at the other sports and get back.
I mean, I was throwing this out there too, you know, and I was saying this. Look, you know, a promotional group, management, whatever. Where's the collateral damage for this? You know, you were calling. You have a guy, you know, and I'm not trying to single out Floyd here. Okay, we're not making. We don't like making assumptions or accusations that we can't prove. But you're a promoter.
It's his platform, though, Dave. It's fair.
Well, the platform, here's the platform that should be realistic of how they're supposed to make a movement of when something like this happens. The platform is you come out and you have some type of newsletter, some type of collateral damage of explaining of what happened to their fighter. I've even noticed this is the second guy, and there's nothing with Mickey Bay. Mickey Bay had to do his own collateral damage. He's the guy that had to go and clean his own backyard. They left him out there to dry. Now with Love, why is this guy who has pounded and said, hey, let's clean up our sport, why is he so silent now? Where's the madness about cleaning up our sport? You know, this is a very dangerous sport, you know, and I want to make sure that my sport is clean. Okay, well, your fighters got popped. Where's the same emotions? Where's the same drive that you had a year ago to 2 years ago?
Yeah, I've always said this about Floyd, that it's a great gesture what he did. He took a step forward. A lot of people always want to remind me, you got to give credit to Floyd. He's the one that started this. Yeah, but what did he do after that besides cleaning up his fights? What did he do after that? Has he educated anyone on the subject? I've learned nothing personally.
Obviously not. There's two fighters right now.
Right. Two of his own fighters. And granted, with Mickey Bay, again, it was
three if you want to throw in Gamboa. You know what I mean?
Right. You know, but you know, and four if you count Floyd, you know, if you believe those rumors. And the more you look at USADA, the more you kind of go, well, he was the first one they were kind of testing and doing this program with. It makes you wonder. You know, what happened? I mean, the way they stopped testing and say, well, we didn't properly educate the guys. Well, is that what happened with those rumored three tests or three positives? They hadn't properly educated him, and so he was taking something and he didn't cycle off? Or I mean, I really want to know what happened. And I think they really should release all those test results, not the press release, but the raw data. Let's see it. Let's find out what his blind code number was. And let's call USADA let's call the UCLA Olympic Testing Lab or the Utah lab and say, let's match this number up over there with the samples and let's see what happened. Did you have a positive?
And again, really, really quick, we're not saying that he tested positive or anything like that. We're just saying we like to see.
I just think there needs to be transparency. That's what I'm saying. There's just too many clouds right now.
Here's the thing. Gamboa, Mickey Bay, now Love, the proof is there. And you have to start connecting all the dots. And that's where right now I'm sitting back and I'm going like, wow. The bloggers, journalists, Yahoo, ESPN, who else is out there? Ring TV. Where's the article at? I want to know. I want to see you guys ask the $1 million question.
Nobody,
why is this happening in your camp?
Nobody's going to do it. I mean,
of course
the ring,
not. Nobody wants to do it. Everybody wants to do. They want their credentials. They want to be able to take the pictures. They want to have that little one-on-one interview and not be called out. This is what cracks me up. I said this is my rant again. We're going to revisit some of the things that I just said earlier on the show. Like I said, Floyd Mayweather, he doesn't like rumors being started. He said, hey, you know, I'm going to clear it up because I don't like journalist people making up rumors. And he looked over to Radio Raheem on that All Access show. Okay, well, here's your chance to clear it up before it gets out of hand. You don't want rumors, but then again, you don't want to attack the real questions. And that real question is what's going on in the camp in TMT. You know what I mean? What's going on with that? Come on, man. You can't turn the cheek one way and call out somebody's shit and then turn it the other way when your shit starts to stink. It doesn't work like that. This is the real world. Guys that put the pen to the paper, isn't that the reason why you do it? I have to question a lot of these dudes out there that if you love this sport, you stand up for this sport. I understand you want to have a TMT hat, a TMT shirt. I understand that you probably are working your ass off to try to get Floyd on your show. But where's the integrity that we're supposed to defend our sport?
Oh, there isn't any.
No, there isn't.
There isn't any.
There isn't any.
You know, it's really what it comes down to, Dave. It's pretty sad, but I mean, nobody out there is trying to be. I mean, I wouldn't say nobody. I thought Steve got down to business, and he covered it.
Handful of people, you know that. But
if you're looking at the ring
circle
for truth tellers, I mean, Mark Ortega is too busy, you know, sucking people off on press row trying to reinvent his image.
Oh.
You've got other guys that are, you know, at the ring. And like I said, I like Mike Rosenthal. I like Doug Fisher. I consider Doug something of a mentor and somebody I'd still look to for advice at times. I'm never going to sit there and trash him, but that is owned by Golden Boy. And Golden Boy right now, with Showtime, is trying to create one brand. And they're trying to put it – just look at the pound-for-pound rankings over there. And I don't care about pound-for-pound, but I do care about integrity. That magazine used to be the Bible of boxing. Now it's owned by a promoter. And the ratings are an absolute joke, an absolute joke. Chuck Ciampa, really? He knows nothing about the sport at this point. I mean, that's what he seems like. But, I mean, you got Adrian Broner, like, you know, in the middle of the pound-for-pound list. You had Robert Guerrero. I think he was, like, 7 or 8 before he fought Floyd, then he dropped off. I mean, geez, I mean, is there any more proof that it's just a marketing magazine at this point?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Some of the articles are good. You know, some of the writers are still worth reading. I still think Doug is must-read. But I'm sorry. You know, a guy like Mark Ortega, no credibility whatsoever. Sorry, but you just don't have it. And you look at what you're asking for, which is, where's the coverage of this? The good coverage of this, and not just, you know,
I think what writers don't understand is we've had segments in our show where we get writers from the 80s to the mid 90s, and even though George Foreman said that, you know, lacks the power of words, you know, the journalists had power with their words. And I think that nowadays that he's absolutely right. You know, a journalist, if he was able to put it on paper, it almost forces the promoter now to come out with something, which that's what we're looking for from the Floyd, from the TMT camp, is for them to come out with something. At least say, listen, we don't have an explanation right now, but we're on the bottom of this. We're trying to figure out what happened here. All right, yes, we have two fighters that have been tested positive, and we need to find a new direction of how to test these fighters and then maybe monitor them a little bit closer. That would be the correct way of almost taking some heat off, the professional way of almost taking some heat off. But if you had a crowd of journalists that blog and write, and that's what you get paid to do, or that's what your passion is for.
I personally think, you know, like Rick Reno has completely dumbed down with his site boxing scene the whole sport, the way we cover things. I firmly believe that. Look at the little blog posts, the little briefs. That's all anybody wants to read anymore, and nobody wants to read a long article. Remember when we read The Ring because the articles were really good and they were well-written?
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite writers is A.J. Liebling. I love reading him because it's like reading poetry about boxing, you know, but in prose form. It's beautiful. Where is that gone? Like, I was reading the article about Peterson saying, hey, we said we were going to do testing. We wanted VADA. They wanted USADA, that same old tune we're hearing from Golden Boy. And which it really doesn't have any sort of reasoning. But at the bottom, at the editorial note, it said – there's an editor's note. And it says – it was by Luis, but the editor's note was by, I believe, Rick Reno. Well, he's the editor. And it said, well, we were contacted by Peterson's people, and they said since the whole incident where he tested positive, we've been testing him with an independent organization. Or we've been testing him ourselves, according to his Peterson's camp. Well, who's doing the testing? Like, Reno does, he just puts that in there, but he doesn't name who they're testing, doesn't find out more information, doesn't check it with two other sources to see if what they're telling him is true or just spin.
Well, if they did that, Gabriel, then they're out of the race.
Right. And I mean, look what Reno did to me last year. And as much as people can say, oh, it might have been my fault or this and that, it was an editor capitulating to the biggest promoter in the sport. Something that would have never happened in the day and age of newspapers, where people had integrity and actually cared about doing the job.
Here's my question to Fight Fans, and Fight Fans that are tuning in, listening, or they're going to catch the archive. Here's my question. When's the last time have you read something where you walked away feeling that, man, I just got educated right now? I walked away just knowing just that much more.
Right. Nobody wants to do that anymore. Everybody just wants to be first. I mean, look at what happened with Lamont Peterson and the Kendall Holt, you know, what Lem Satterfield did to them. He was desperate to be first, and so he was wrong, but he was first, you know?
Everybody gets caught up in that moment to get in that race, but, you know, there's got to come a time where you have to slow down and get a drink of water. I mean, let me put this out there. You know, I had some people hitting me up on email going, hey, who's on tonight? What guest? And my answer was that I was like, well, we're not going to get a guest. We're not going to have any guests this tonight. And here's our reason. It's because we get so many guests, and sometimes I feel like it just kind of gets played out for a minute, and it really takes away the meat of what we need to of discussion that we need to have on Leaving the Ring. And I knew there was a lot of meat, of meat before we got to the bone. And that's what we planned. That's what we wanted to do. That's what our plan was for today here on Leaving the Ring. And
I agree with you. I don't like being beholden to the whole guest every week. We need it. And we, you know what? Next week we got to have a better guest than the week we had before. You know, this is exclusive. Even though five other people have interviewed this guy this week, I like the fact that we don't fall into that trap of being a media outlet like that, in that sense. You know, we got to break the form every once in a while, and I'd rather hear from the fans sometimes than people in the industry. I don't know about you, but I get kind of tired of being hyped to or lied to or having to dig through all that stuff. You're like, Jesus, why don't we just talk to somebody like the guy who was like, dude, can we do something about these shitty pay-per-views? That's honest. I like hearing that stuff. I'd rather talk to the guests or to the fans all night.
Yeah, we had a great volume of callers today. Great questions, great insight, their point of view of fights that are happening, especially with the Lamont Peterson and Lucas Matisas. Brian Fogg was able to call in, had a great discussion. If you missed all that, you certainly will get back on. My rant about Sugar Shane Mosley using the word retire very loosely. But here's the thing. I'm always checking Twitter to see what people got to say. Facebook, I really hardly get on, but our Gmail account, which is leavingtheringatgmail. And Frank... Let me make sure I got your last name. Dameron, Frank Dameron, just emailed me. He said, Dave, did I hear this correctly? You were taking a shot at Victor Conte. No, I wasn't taking a shot at him. The caller that was on a little earlier, and I'm going to, you know, if you're just catching up, and, you know, Gabriel's just got on about maybe half an hour ago, so I'll catch him to speed on what I was talking about. Because we were going in with the whole drug thing. Caller said, how do you feel about, all this happening. I think that's what was the question. I can't really remember. I'm not going to say it word for word. But I had said that what's all that's happening, even with Dave, it's kind of sad. Because even though we want to clean up our sport, you sometimes want it, myself, my feeling is you want it kind of cleaned up in a much quieter way, you know? And you would think maybe one or two guys getting popped would have been the quiet way of happening where it would have cleaned it up. But it's not. It's getting louder and louder and louder. Then I said after that, and I'll clarify because I didn't get to finish what my thought was about the whole Victor Conte. I said sometimes I kind of want to wish that wouldn't be so vocal times because, you know, one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite guys that comes on and educates us and has put us to light with VADA testing and about, you know, what the sport really needs, the direction they need to go in testing is what I wanted to say was sometimes when you're beating it down somebody's throat or throwing it in their face so many times that person just decides to either not open their eyes anymore and they start taking it to be offensive, they want to hear. So sometimes we, as guys like myself that want to clean up this sport, you got to back up a little bit. So that's why when we have our rant, we go in all in on our rant. It's not all the time. We're not going to do it every single Thursday night show or every segment of what we do on the app. But we have to do it. I think you have to pick and choose the times to make the matter bigger than what, you know, big enough for somebody to listen. You know what I mean? I don't know.
You know, I think sometimes things can become white noise. Like I saw BJ Flores getting annoyed by Victor. But, you know, the thing with Victor is this, is the things he's saying are pretty right on, and they're pretty true. And he's been saying them for a long time, like since he got caught. Like after that, he started saying, like, okay, well, testosterone's a problem. Here's the solution. CIR is the way to go. And I think in particular, he's zeroed in on Memo Heredia, and they kind of go back and forth. But here's the thing. I mean, if you're keeping score with it, I mean, like I saw Mark Ortega yell at Conte, you know, Jesus, get enough, Betty. You know, like the world needed Mark Ortega's blow-by-blow of his experience with a drunken co-ed in Vegas, which he did several tweets that somebody, a female, said, are you watching this disgusting thing happening on the timeline? I don't think that guy has any room to speak to anybody about anything. He should just shut his damaged mouth and keep it that way. But with Victor, I would say that, yeah, his methods are unorthodox. They're a little different.
Let me say this real quick. With the whole Memo thing, this is what I don't like. Is he's making Memo have an audience of cheerleaders. They're just kind of behind him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but they're idiots. I mean,
yeah,
like,
but you know,
that's a gorilla, and another guy that's a coffee cup, and another guy who's, you know, is a parody account of Dan Raphael. He's the mayor of Moronville, and if you look at the people that follow Victor, they're intelligent folks. They actually listen to reason. They generally have pictures that match their names. They're not a parody account or a gorilla or a coffee cup. I thought that was really funny, Heredia going on Twitter saying that he was going to sue me. I'll see you in court, buddy. And this guy, Dan Raphael _ sucks on Twitter, is going, yeah, man, you should sue him for libel. That's terrible. Yeah, look at your Twitter name, dummy. And Heredia is arguing with him. I think at some level, maybe we make too much of what happens on Twitter and think that that's...
It's just that old saying, though, you know, where when you argue with somebody stupid...
I agree with that.
You end up just being as stupid as them. And that's what my point is that Victor, to me, has way more class, in my opinion, has way more class than Memo Heredia, who doesn't want to answer questions, he doesn't want to come out clean or even be challenged. I mean, Victor came on Leaving the Ring, what, 5 years ago, where nobody was talking about Victor Conte, nobody was talking about any type of testing, and he went under the scope with us. So you got to give, you know, when I have guys, when I've spoken to other fight fans and writers, and they go, well, why do you give Victor Conte a pass? I say, why? Because he was willing to talk. When a guy that's been accused or ends up guilty, and doesn't want to talk about it, he only leaves the imagination to run. But when you get a guy that puts you in the track, stops you in the track and says, okay, well, hear my side of the story. There's two sides of everybody. Okay, folks, two sides to coin. You just don't flip it, and it's always going to be heads. You got to flip it and keep flipping it to see what you get. And that's what we got with Victor Conte.
I'll tell you what. Nobody, and I will toot my own horn, nobody's covered drugs in the sport like me, and you know, with the exception of my friend Dave here, who's been right next to me the whole time. And no one has spent more time talking to Victor Conte in the last 3 years, I think, than myself. He's a guy that I've just vetted quite a bit because he's got a lot of information, and I want that information. I want to know. That's what God is. And I find it interesting that Victor right now, you know, like again, with this Ortega character yelling at Conte. Well, if you look at the interview that he did with Heredia, Ortega, it was really kind of quick. It looked like it came from a place of fear and lack of knowledge. And then you look at all the questions that Victor Conte has been asking Heredia. No reporter, except for myself, I would say, and Steve Kim, who's tried to interview Heredia, has actually asked him tough questions. Victor's asked tough questions, like really good, smart questions, and taken Heredia's own words and like flipped them on him. And then you look at like the questions Ortega clearly didn't ask. It's like, dude, you have no room to criticize Victor. He's actually doing a better job at your job than you are. And I would say that goes for – look at the Zab Judah at that press conference. And look at the way, you know, Robert Guerrero's dad like flipped out and mentioned the which when Floyd made that 30 Days in May video, he put that story, him and the altercation with Josie Harris, out there for us to deal with. He made it a story by trying to rewrite history, and he got called on it. He didn't get called on it by the media. He got called on it by Ruben Guerrero. So I think it kind of goes all back to it. It's like if Victor doesn't sit there and point out all the lies or misinformation that Heredia seems to be putting out there, that he's been, you know, putting together a USADA testing program since last November, which turned out to be not true, that his fighters will be mandated to do 365 testing after the Pacquiao-Marquez IV fight, didn't turn out to be true. He said in November of 2011 he had already filed a lawsuit against Victor Conte. Not true. Said the same thing about me. Not true. If Victor doesn't point it out or I don't point it out, who the hell's going to point it out?
Right.
And so that's why, you know, like BJ Flores will try to get all on Victor, you know, calling him a little schoolboy. But it's like, you know what though, BJ? You're trying to be media, and let's just be clear, you're a talking head. You're a host, which is cool. And you're learning how to do that. And he came on the show, was a real nice, forthcoming guy, was very honest about his career. I'm talking shit about him. But you're the one that hired Memo Heredia, and you're the one that didn't get into a testing program to prove how clean his work is. So whatever cloud of suspicion is there over you and him, you happily walked underneath it, laid down your picnic blanket, and set up shop. Until you get into a testing program, I can't believe you when you say, well, I'm working with this guy, but he's totally clean. Why would I
believe that? You know what I mean?
Why did you hire him? Off the work he did with Marquez.
And you hire somebody that you already know has a history. Why would you not think that there was going to be – how could you not – you know what I mean? Like, how do you walk in – man, I'm just I'm going to give some quick shout-outs really, really fast, man. And then we'll get on our prediction. I'm getting burnt out over here. Patrick Connor. Patrick Connor's doing a radio show. One of my guy that I follow, and he follows me back, and really nice guy, man. I really enjoy this guy's tweets. He's funny as hell. He's doing Queensberry Rules Radio. I haven't had a chance to check it out, but I wanted to give him a shout out because the guy does a lot for the sport as well. Bad Left Hook, really good website. I enjoy. I went off of some of the stuff that they did today here on the radio show. These guys need a lot of credit.
He's great for that. I mean, really compiling all the news stories and saying, this is what happened. You can, like, go to him and hit all the major news sources. Yeah, I really like him, too.
You know, and Tony Whitby, who does Punches and Bunches, guy, man, he does it every Wednesday night. He just doesn't get the recognition. Guy's just pure boxing. He's always talking the sport. He's good for the sport. To my boy Big Tree, man, Big Tree. Josh McDaniel out there in Las Vegas. Haven't had a chance to talk to him because I've been so busy. And Brian Fogg, man, just doing a fantastic job. Barbara Pinella, who is a writer for us as well, she's a pet bull. She's a pet bull of the game, you know, and she's out there. And, you know, when I talk about writers and this and that need to do their thing as a journalist, Brian Fogg has been calling TMT. So don't send me an email saying that, hey, you know, practice what you preach. Hey, my writers are on top of it. They're trying to get to the nitty gritty. Okay. So anyways, let's get down to our five predictions here. I think we've had our rant. I think we've talked about what we needed to get off our chest.
I think people need to understand, too, that things kind of go both ways. When you start getting banned by publications, it's not like they're making themselves, you know, available for you to talk to them.
I texted
Jay Love yesterday and said, whenever you're ready to talk, we can talk. So, yeah, we walk the talk. I mean, you can't look at any of the work that we're doing and say, these guys don't cover all sides of a story, because that's just bullshit.
Yep. So I already gave out the fight schedule, so I'm just going to go down really quick with Devon Alexander, Lee Purdy. Well, who do you got there, man? Who do you think takes it? I get my pick. I pretty much predicted a pretty boring fight. I think Devon's going to do what he needs to do. We might have some confusion just because of the cancellation after cancellation with his fight with Cal Brook.
Yeah.
But I still think Alexander, just because based on the talent that he has, it's a long shot that I think Lee's going to be able to do anything. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think Purdy does anything in this. I mean, he's just a guy, you know. He's 25, he's young, he's got 3 losses. Anytime he's kind of gotten near, it's not even, you know, like top-level competition, but, I mean, he's lost to a guy that was 12-13 and another guy that was 35-9. I mean, he's just not on that level. But you know, he was a late substitute. What are you going to do? I think Devon Alexander just takes him out and probably like – this will be interesting to see because I don't think Devin's power is all that. So I'm gonna go Alexander by decision.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, I think it's just it goes the distance. We're just not gonna get. Like I said, it's not gonna be the appetizer that's gonna get us ready for the main course, which would be Lamont Peterson and Lucas Matisse's. You know, interesting fight though under it with Sean Porter against Phil Lo Greco. I was saying, you know, Sean Porter, you can't really now. The criticism was that he couldn't take out Julio Diaz. Julio Diaz, Kid Diaz, and you got to kind of factor now that Diaz was a major problem. He gave problems to Amir Khan. They went the distance. So for Porter, I think for his credit, he was in there with a guy that was refusing to go out. So, how well does he do in this welterweight bout for 10 rounds here? Okay, but what's your pick? I said Porter. I think he pulls it. I still think it goes 10 rounds. But it's not going to be – it's not a barn burner here. You on mute, buddy?
I'm totally on mute. He had a couple good moments, but in his career, Sean Porter. But I just – overall, it's kind of like a boring package. It just doesn't – it's like one gear and it doesn't really quite go anywhere, you know. But this is an interesting fight. I mean, you know, LaGreco, 28, it's kind of one of those, if you're going to do it, you would have done it by now kind of guys, you know. But this is an interesting fight. I think it's going to be – I mean, if you go kind of life and death with Julio Diaz, I mean – maybe Julio had more left than we thought. I don't know. Now that he's kind of at his natural weight, and he's a quality fighter.
I think
it's a hard fight, though.
I think he's a smart fighter. He has. I thought he had a. You know, at first, I think I was with the rest of the guys. You know, saying like, "Wow, Porter's not that good, I guess, huh?" But seeing that Diaz had a little bit more left than him, it just makes you wonder. That Porter was facing a much more better condition and prepared Diaz. So I wouldn't say that Porter's not a good fighter. You know what I mean? Just want to throw him under that bus right now. So I still think that he's got some – he needs to do some valid points in this fight and kind of show that was the fight going the distance with Diaz. Was that a fluke? Was he not properly prepared because he thought maybe like the rest of us that he was going to get him out of there pretty quick? He's got something to show here on this welterweight fight here, you know. But we'll go with the main event. Your pick is Porter as well, right?
I'm taking Porter. I just think. But,
I figured you would.
But, you know, But I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I mean, look, Greco could do some things. I'm not that big on Porter, so it's like I'm picking him, but...
I'm with you on that. I'm not,
you know what I mean?
Big
like,
on Porter. But then again, I'm not that big on LaGreco. So, you know, it's like it's an even fight. It's one of those, well, I don't know. Who can – we just got to find out Saturday night. The fight, though, everybody's wanting – everybody's looking forward to seeing on Saturday night at the Boardwalk Hall, Atlantic City, is Lamont Peterson and Lucas Matisse, which is at a catchweight at 141. I gave you my whole scenario about Matisse, about the burglary, about the visa, and I also told you about the scenario might happen that they might go to might come to Lamont Peterson the way they went to Escobedo with the he's not going to make 143, but I tell you what, we'll penalize them and give you more money so Lucas can come in at 150. That could be a big huge scenario. Does the Peterson camp stick to their guns and say nope, he needs to make weight, or do they fall into the money trap because there is no title on the line here?
I would say that they make him make weight. I think that they will.
That
do
would
that.
Be the smart move.
Yeah, I would almost guarantee that they'll make him make weight. And you know, I'm going to go with Lamont in this fight, but with the caveat that he's not going to get the decision. We're going to think that he won, but it's going to be Matisse because look at the politics of it. I think they're fairly evenly matched. I know everybody really is excited about the power of Matisse, but you know, he went the distance with Alexander, and he went the distance with Judah. Now, arguably, he won those fights, right? But the bottom line is that he didn't. And those guys, you know, are not exactly – well, Alexander's got a decent chin, but Judah supposedly can be stopped, and Matisse wasn't able to do that. So I know styles make fights and everything, but still. I think that Peterson's got enough of a beard, and he's rugged enough to get in there, and it's going to be a brutal fight, but I think he's going to last – all the way to the end, and I think we might feel like on the inside he's going to do better work, but the judges won't count it because this isn't happening in D.C. where the commission favors him. This is happening in New Jersey. Now, if you're a Golden Boy fighter, it wouldn't matter, but these are two Golden Boy fighters. Only one, Lucas Matisse, happens to be now with Al Haymon, and that just happened in the last few weeks. So I'm going to go with the guy that's with Haymon to get the decision in New Jersey as opposed to the guy that got a close decision in D.C. and Golden Boy has been mad about it ever since.
Oh, man. You know, I didn't even make my pick, but I'm gonna give you my take here. Lucas Matisse needs to wish – not needs to wish. He needs to hope that Lamont Peterson comes in and wants to be daring. Daring meaning that the way Lamont Peterson has looked, even starting from Tim Bradley, wanting to stand and trade, forget the cutie, forget boxing, try to overwhelm and overpower his opponents. He tried to do it with Victor Ortiz. He got in there, obviously got the job done again. Holt. That's the guy that Lucas hopes to get in with. If not, goes the distance with Lamont Peterson, who's got a tough beard, and also who's a boxer. A much better boxer. But like I mentioned earlier, Lucas Matisse goes into knowing, already knowing that he's always going to be outspeed. He's always going to be outboxed. But his workmanship is what has got him to this point. His workmanship is the one thing that's got him the wins and the fans to be behind him and root for him. My pick is, this is my pick, and it really depends on Lamont Peterson. Who does he decide to be Saturday night? Did he decide to be the guy that dares to go in the mouth of the lion? Or does he decide to be the lion's keeper? That's my pick.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah, I mean, if he goes inside and hangs out inside the eye of the storm, I think it's going to be damaging for Lamont. As good as he is on the inside there, he might be better. God, it's a good fight. You know, it's just
good.
A really good fight.
Good fight. And I'm glad to see that
Giovanni
Segura is going to be back in the ring on Tiva Azteca against Edgar Sosa. It's a 12-round fight in the flyweights. What's your pick really quick? Who do you got on that fight?
You know, I'm going to go with Edgar Sosa.
Go with him too.
Yeah, I like where he's coming from. I mean, I know that Giovanni came back, you know, earlier this year, and he looked pretty good, but I just think Sosa is a longer reach. He can move around a little bit more. I mean, I know he's been stopped before, but it's been a long, long time since that happened. You know, I would say, yeah.
Versus a guy that's been consistent. This is the thing. Versus a guy that's been consistent from a guy that needed to come back, so that means he had to work on certain things to look good.
Right, right. Whereas you got a guy that's fighting, you know, kind of not top-level opposition, but, you know, Ulysses Solis is no slouch, and he's fighting in, like, eliminators or defending that silver flyweight belt. Yeah, I would say you're right. You know, that's the guy I kind of want to lean towards. But I think it could devolve into just an all-action war.
Right, that's going to be exciting on TV Azteca. I'm hoping it's going to be an all-action war. Sergio Thompson is going to be facing the terrible TBA on a super slot featherweight and the 10 rounds as well. Beat Linares, but hasn't really been, you know what? That's been the highlight of his career. And that's it.
I got penalized for beating Linares, right?
Yeah, he just got, absolutely, he got a timeout. And the timeout is, I don't know if it's affected him. I mean, the steam has really just died out. You got to put wood in that fire.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's fought, but I mean, look who he's fought. And
exactly.
He fought on one, you know, Vegas card, but the rest of it has been, you know, Mexican fights that nobody's really seen. I don't really, you know, that's what happens when the matchmakers are maybe, you know, I don't know. They're going to flip out and get all sensitive, but they seem to really be excited, the Golden Boy, about Linares. And everybody's like, oh, this guy's great, and, you know, it's going to happen. And I know that Robert Diaz is close to him and everything. And then he gets stopped in two rounds. The guy that stops him, nothing happens with his career. You do have to kind of wonder.
Right.
What the hell? Yep. You know, but it is what it...
Well, that's why he got the timeout, you know what I mean, for beating somebody that they were more friendly than they should be with a fighter. And that's going to be in Fox Deportes in Mexico and Cancun at the Grand Oasis Resort. And the main event, the cooker for that one, is going to be Sugar Shane, I'm going to retire when I want to retire, Mosley, versus Pablo Cesar Cano, in a welterweight fight for 12 rounds. Drum roll here. Let me ask the neighbor across the street who has a newborn child, it's like 6 months or something like that. I'll ask them for their pick and let's see if they get it right, you know, or better yet, since Broner left and since Broner's comb is going to stick with HBO, we'll ask Broner's comb and he'll probably have the more intelligent answer for that one. I'm expecting Pablito Cesar to just to go the 12 rounds and again use Mosley as that stepping stone because he's got a name, he's a brand. The Sugar has a brand there, but you know what? This is going to be the great part. I think it's going to air at maybe 10, 11 o'clock at night. So it's only right that the Sugar brought to your coffee so you can stay up a little late to watch that fight.
Yeah, I like that. That's funny. It better keep us awake. I mean, you know, watching 12 rounds of high fives shouldn't be that bad. I think that Pablo Cesar Cano, though, he could give angles. He could give trouble. I don't think
this is... He could give trouble, right.
This isn't quite the guy that you want to face, you know, when you really desperately need that win. And it's... Boy, he hasn't won since 2009, man.
Does he really... Honestly, do you think Shane really is desperately wanting a win? Or is he just desperately needing a paycheck? I asked this earlier. I asked my fans to call in. Is this a case of, I want to try to, you know, continue my legacy and do something, be the smaller version of George Foreman, so maybe possibly down the line I can get some Sugar grills, or hey, I need to keep up with my lifestyle. You know, I got Bella, I got all this other stuff going on. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not really sure what it is that's driving him. I mean, you know, he's a warrior, so of course he's not going to want to quit. Shane's just not that guy. But, yeah, at the same time, you kind of have to wonder, what the hell?
I just don't
know. Like, when is it going to stop? You know, I'm going to stop when I want to stop. Well, whatever happened to commissions? And we talk about them, you know, we want them to do the doping testing better. But how about stuff like this where, you know, a guy, what do we need to see from Shane that's going to make us go, you know what, it really is time? I mean, it's been time, right?
Until he's on a stretcher. And then they're going to, you know, we're going to have the Boxing Association come out and go, we need to be more, conscious and we have to have stricter rules for the commissions. God, you know, it's just one of those, it's just one of those song and dances where, you know, I don't even know to even go with it. I can't even come up with a good metaphor for Sugar right now. I just wish that, because we've had him on, very likable guy, very likable person. And
yeah.
I really honestly just believed, and I got doped into believing that he was going to retire and that he was, you know, going to celebrate it by training his son and being under the sun and just kind of reap what he's already sowed. But instead, he's back from the dead. Dad's back from the dead of books of boxing where he should stay. You remember that when he posed in the Ring magazine, the new Sugar Ray Robinson, you know, he was.
Yeah.
Now I can't even look at that. I can't even look. I have that magazine. I can't even look at that magazine, the Ring.
Is that the one where he's looking over his shoulder? I always thought that was a weird pose. I don't know. It's an odd pose for a boxer. He's like,
no, you know what? It was the one that he's standing there, and he's got his white robe on, and everything's like kind of gold.
Oh, yeah.
That one.
Okay.
And stuff. But anyways.
Well, the over-the-shoulder one was after he beat Oscar. I was just thought. My brother and I were like, that's just a weird. That's like a pose you see a bikini model do, not a boxer. But
no.
I'll have to show it to you. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
There's one more fight, and somebody asked us about it. Brian Fogg asked us about it.
Oh.
Dennis Lebedev versus Guillermo. I look a lot like Bernie Mac.
Oh, Jones. God, I forgot about that one. Yes.
Yeah. And Alexander Povetkin, you know, is fighting against Walrids.
Who?
Alexander, yeah, exactly. But Guillermo Jones, who bears a striking resemblance to the late Bernie Mac, versus Dennis Lebedev. It's going to be a
I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Doesn't he? Ooh, denim like a jean. He does. He looks just like him. I think this is a good fight. I'm going with Guillermo Jones, although just inactivity is really – I thought he could have done so much more with the career, but he kind of got Don King to kind of put on the back burner. I like Guillermo Jones. Can he win a decision? I don't know.
I don't know, man.
But I'm pulling for him just because I'm a big fan of him, and I Lebedev. I mean, there's a reason why he's been fighting like James Toney and the ghost of Roy Jones Jr. You know,
I'm gonna go with Lebedev. I think that everything just kind of if you put a scale up and you put his name on and Guillermo Jones on, you know, side to side of that, the scale is just gonna way more down for Lebedev. So I'm gonna go with him.
Yeah. Okay. We got James DeGales fighting. Yeah,
Wealth TV, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a little. I'm not a fan.
You know, it's the first time Wealth TV really doesn't. It's not. Hasn't really. This card didn't really catch my eye.
No, not at all. But you know,
which is fun because they've thrown up some pretty good fights out there for fight fans to you know, get online and watch Wealth TV. So I give them a pass, but this was not one of their better buy cards that they have bought from a promoter.
Yeah, no, this is going to be, you know, it is what it is. But they can't all be great, you know, but
no.
I think Peterson Matisse is going to do it for us. And Lebedev Jones is going to be nice. I think several of these fights will be fun. Yeah, I think Sosa Segura is going to be, might be the fight of the weekend. Okay, that's the potential to be. Although Matisse and Peterson, everybody's already dubbing it. I guess that's where we're at. I mean, I think you're in the same place that I am in terms of media to kind of bring it back to the – as we hit the end of the show. But it's just – I think as media we have to kind of wonder what we are sometimes. I think that's where we're at, where we haven't had a few shows. Dave and I have both been dealing with just life stuff, you know, and we kind of have taken a moment to step back from the grind of doing a show every week for years. We've been doing this for years together. And it's tough, and you have to kind of step back every once in a while and reassess, what are we doing? I wrote this in my piece a few weeks ago, and I didn't get a lot of media response from it because it was kind of brutal to the media. But what are we? Are we a part of the promotions? Are we here just to bring the fighters on when it's convenient to the publicists so that they are serviced and their guy gets enough ink or airtime that they can kind of promote the fight? Is that what we're for? Or are we here to tell the truth and be guardians of the sport and make sure that the things that need to happen, happen, or that the injustices that need to be pointed out or the things that are kind of funky get pointed out? I tend to think that's what we're for. I you notice I don't write that many articles anymore. I don't. You don't see me just ripping conference call quotes all the time. I do it every once in a while, but just to make sure I got my opinion out there about some piece. I don't consider myself that important. What's important is the facts coming out and the truth being told when it needs to be told. You know, quality over quantity is how I look at it. So I don't know. As we head into it, you know, we're going to have guests again probably next week, but for this week, I think it was more important that we kind of stop and we do have to wonder. I don't ever want to become one of those media watchdog guys with a blog and, you know, I'm sitting there not really working the beat but telling everybody how to do it. I don't ever want to be that guy. But at the same time, when I watch people do interviews with Heredia and they don't call him on BS, like the fact that he's sitting there saying, we're going to do USADA testing for all my fights, and it's not happened, and no one's called him on it, yet they'll do interviews and let him say that. What you're doing is becoming a publicist for your subject as opposed to, you know, doing an interview and having facts and stopping a guy when he's lying and saying, no, that's actually not true, and this is why it isn't true, because I've armed myself as a reporter with facts. That's our job. Nothing more, nothing less. It's not about hits. It's not about traffic. I don't care about those things. I never have. I never will. It's about doing the job correctly.
Yep. That's
basically
how
it.
I feel. Yep. Anyways, fight fans, everybody that tunes in every Thursday night here on Leaving the Ring Radio and has download the app on Android or iPhone, I thank you very much. We'll catch up with you guys next week with some guests. I don't know who we're going to get on.
I have no idea.
We always get a lot of people on and stuff, you know, and kind of run out. Well, you know, we're at that point. We want to touch on something that's going to really matter that you guys want to hear, and when you walk away, remember I said articles where you walk away feeling like, hey, I kind of learned something today. I don't know, maybe today you felt like, hey, I didn't learn anything today off the Leaving the Ring Radio show, but that's fine.
You learn how we feel.
You learn that Matisse's flight was delayed, burglary, and there was a visa problem, and we learned is that an hour and a half later, mysteriously, Gabriel Montoya shows up. Now we know why. So if Matisse loses this Saturday night, it was because everybody was in search with the Montoya Waldo. And we found him.
Oh, that was, dude. I'll tell you about that off the air. That was a trek.
Anyways, fight fans, hey, man, catch you guys next week. I got to go get something to eat, man. I smell some buffalo wings in the background. I think my kids are chowing down without
nice.
Papa Bear over here. Anyways, enjoy Saturday night. Enjoy with your family. And remember, don't drink and drive because you might spill your beer.
Peace.